Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
You stupid f***. You, Williamson, I'm talking to you, shithead. You just cost me $6,000. $6,000 and one Cadillac. That's right. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it, asshole? You f***ing shithead. Where did you learn your trade, you stupid f***ing, you idiot? Whoever told you that you could work with men?
Could I,
Oh, I'm going to have your job. Shit. I'm going downtown. I'm going to talk to Mitch and Murray. I'm going to Lemkin. I don't care whose nephew you are, who you know, whose you're sucking on. You're going out. I swear to you, you're going.
Let's get this done.
Anyone in this office lives on his wits. I'm going to be with you in a second. What you're hired for is to help us. Does that seem clear to you? To help us, not to fuck us up. To help men who are going out there to try to earn a living, you fairy. You company man. I'll tell you something else. I hope you rip the joint off. I can tell our friend here a little something might help him to catch you. You want to learn the first rule? You'd know if you ever spent a day in your life. You never open your mouth till you know what the shot is. You f***ing child.
Minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of June in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. It is Tuesday. Welcome to day 12. If you would like to join us today, it's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. If you would like to engage with us telephonically, you can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N, rickemerson.com. Text box open to the website as well. And you can Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show. It's all one word there. It's Rick Emerson Show via Skype and so forth. All right. So I pulled this story from the Drudge Report, which is, I guess it's from Edmonton. Was Edmonton in Canada?
Yes.
Sounds like a place in Canada.
Yes, it is.
All right. So the story about the woman who came back home and her lawn had been stolen. So we'll get to that here in a second, because several people have emailed me this story. Shaman just mentioned it during the top of the hour, and it was sitting in my inbox as well. It's the weirdest thing. It's like she has a lawn, and then she leaves, and then she comes back home. House there? No lawn. Just gone. All right, so I'll put the photograph of that up here in just a bit, and we'll get to that story later on today. Let's see, Hick Watch coming up. Wait, tell me if I've got this right. Hick Watch, Clown Watch, Penis Watch?
Yes, indeed. You are absolutely correct, sir.
Penis, Hick, Clown. All right.
Yes.
Yes.
So I'll do that.
I'm doing my Ed McMahon today.
Don't. Please don't do that.
You are correct, sir.
Don't. Stop. Don't. Because now I'm going to have to... now I have to find my... I have to find the... Don Taylor's working on the following headlines today.
A man's wife catches him up to no good after posing as a teenage girl on Facebook. New York State is getting closer to legalizing gay marriage. And a guy goes all a man called horse with a hot air balloon.
Really?
Yeah.
Goes all a man called horse?
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Now I got to dig at the... now I got to dig at this soundbite that I was going to play. Is this a different guy pretending to be a teenage girl online? This yeah. isn't another guy pretending to be a lesbian while engaged in conversation with another guy.
No, this is a woman who pretended to be a teenager to see what her husband was up to, and she found more than she expected.
Okay, so she was pretending to be a teenage
right.
girl too. Okay, all right. And also, by the way, apparently the guys at the operators of the Lulz cannons at Lulzsec have got a they've now got a voicemail greeting you can call, which we will be phoning up here in just a few.
I can't even keep up with that story. I have a piece here about them, you know, hacking into something, and I was going to read it, and then we're talking about this with Thomas Gill in between the shows, and apparently there's all this other stuff that is going on. It's like, you can't even, you print out, like, a story about these guys, and 10 minutes later it's obsolete, because there's, like, something else they've done.
Apparently they've, there's no lulls in their activity, Don.
No.
Apparently they have this number you can call. It's a recording. The estimation is that it's a recording, so they have a place so angry people can call and yell at them and they can laugh at it. So we'll call that here in just a few.
Because they enjoy their lulls.
That's exactly. So Hick Watch, Clown Watch, Penis Watch coming up today. Also, that top five, which has been sort of sitting here. I mean, it's not like... look, the thing is, the top five is already 38 years old, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so as a result...
It ain't getting any fresher.
Yeah, it's not like it's time sensitive somehow. It is, in the truest sense of the word, I didn't even know that it's evergreen. It's just ever brown. It's just there.
It's suspended in amber.
Yeah, we'll just get to that here in a bit. So I got the top five we can get to later on the day. Also, supplemental thoughts on Sunday's episode of The Killing, which by the way, has generated more response than any of the other episodes so far this season. Not just from you, but I came in this morning, I had a whole other raft of emails from listeners about it. And then I watched it again last night because I watched it with Lara. And there were things that jumped out at me that I don't think either of us noticed the first time around.
Yeah, I need to watch it again because I started having like these sort of second and third thoughts after the show was over, and I was like texting you and going, I have a completely different theory now. It's a show that makes you like think about it a lot after it's over. But this last episode in particular has just stuck with me, and I just keep thinking about everything at this point and reconfiguring it all.
It really is just exceptionally good. It is just a fascinating television program. So if you're not watching The Killing at this point, I was going to say you should hold off, but you might as well not, because now, if you start watching it now, you'll be able to maybe be caught up. I mean, because there's only 12 episodes down, you could be caught up in time for this Sunday's finale, which I believe is the case.
But at this point, you might as well just, like, if you haven't been watching it, just don't listen to us. Don't listen to what anybody else has to say. Wait, like, you know, a month or so when it all comes out in one big DVD set. And just sit down and treat yourself to watching the thing from start to finish as one just, like, huge, long movie. Because it really will play like that. It's just amazing.
It really is quite good. Before we do anything else, so let's see, because I promised to do this. Hold on a second. Let's see if we can just... Where's my phone? Where's my telephone? All right, let's see. Let's just... You have to let it ring several times, then it goes to whatever their greeting is.
Are we going to leave a message or just listen?
No, I think it's a bad idea to leave a message. Uh-huh. That probably seems...
Bonjour, you have reached the voicemail box of Pierre Dubois and François Deluxe. We are not available right now as we are busy raping your internet. Leave a message and we will get back to you whenever we feel like.
Excellent. So there you go.
Thank you.
I mean, come on. If technology can't be used for something like that, then what's the point of it, I ask you? What is the point of any of it, Don? Fantastic. All right, there you go. So if you ever wonder what the Lulz cannon actually sounds like, it sounds like that guy doing that thing in that voice.
All right.
Awesome. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email. You can also do any of those things if you like. If that's your fancy. It may not be. I really honestly don't have any. I have no idea. I just don't know anymore. All I know is that whatever I was doing last night was not what you were doing last night, because what you were doing last night was sitting around and eating just a huge vat of pub cheese. Yeah. This is what the picture that I got from Don last night was. You.
I posted it to Facebook, too, so if you follow me on Facebook, you can see the photo.
And it was just like a big cardboard box with all your possessions inside of it, and then just a huge, like scoopy sort of thing of pub cheese sitting on top of it. I don't even know if anything was unpacked in the box.
No, yeah, the box is full of stuff, just mostly kitchen stuff, because we still haven't got the drawers fixed. Because, as I don't know if I mentioned this yesterday or not, but they pulled out all the drawers, and they're like, painting the drawers. And I decided, I'm just, screw it, I'm just going to put the drawers back in the cabinets and realize that they'd unscrewed the rails on the bottom that roll on the little rollers. So if you put them in, they just don't sit on anything and they just go thump. So I don't have any drawers in my cabinets. And so we haven't put any of that stuff away. The oven is electric, but it had been pulled out from the wall and unplugged because they were painting. And we were looking at it and going, wow, that's filthy. We need to clean that. So let's not actually fire it up and cook anything until... Microwave is still in the storage unit. So it's kind of this thing of, what are we going to do for dinner? And I said, well, I guess this just calls for pub cheese and crackers. You know, any sure. excuse, really. So we stopped at Trader Joe's and got... And I had to find... And yeah, and then we have my big chair from the living room. And then there was this sort of broken down old Lazy Boy recliner that had been left behind in one of the bedrooms. And we dragged that out into the living room. So we have these two chairs and this huge box that we were using at a table. And I set my laptop on it, and we were watching, like, TV on the laptop and then using it kind of a table and having crackers and pub cheese. I got the little TLC and those Gorgonzola crackers. You know the ones I'm talking about?
No,
those
I do.
I love the
little hexagonal crackers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, those are good. And some salami, and that was our dinner.
Are you like some sort of techno hobo, you know, where you've got... I mean, you've got like a 55-inch television, and you've got a brand new laptop, and you've got, you know, your Wi-Fi, and you've got your whatever, and yet you're just propping everything up on, on cardboard boxes and just eating things out of disposable plastic tubs.
Yeah, at the moment, pretty much, yes.
Okay, fantastic.
And then we had this adventure where we have a door, because, again, it was a house that used to be just a two-story house and has been reconfigured to be a duplex. And there's stairs downstairs, and it goes directly to there's a hall that goes to our roommate's place, and then there's a laundry room. And we went down, and we've been trying to figure out, like, how to change the lock on the door to the hallway and that sort of thing.
I am so confused about the layout of your house. So you, okay, so let's say this room is your house.
Okay.
And let's say is it like the kitchen is your neighbor's?
Well, no, he's downstairs. He's below us.
But I mean, but you guys don't share a single door. It's not like some Motel 6 where there's a door between you and the next room.
No, no, he's completely down. It's a house, but it's on kind of a hill.
Right.
And so we are on the main floor of the house, which is actually the upstairs.
Right.
And then he lives downstairs.
Okay, but there's a hallway between your place and his?
No, there's a hallway down at the bottom of we have stairs inside our place.
Yes.
And then if you go down to the bottom of those stairs, there's a door. And if you open that door, there's a hall that goes to his place. And there's another door that goes to the laundry room.
Okay, you know what it's like? It's like, there's this office down the hall here at the E&N Studios that Joe Squires, he was showing it to us the other day, because it was a question of, like, do you want to rent it? And is it, you know, but there's, if you go out the back steps of this office down here, you go down the back, there's a door in that office that is apparently locked and you're not allowed to open. And the reason is because if you go out that back door, it takes you down some steps, down a hallway, which in turn leads you to the front door of a business on the other side of the building.
Yeah, it's like that.
It is like that. Okay, yeah. So I was trying to get... Okay, that's what I was trying to figure, because I knew it was one house that they'd sort of partitioned over time into various living quarters. Okay, so now I've got to... Okay,
so
I've got
that,
it.
And I've been trying, you know, and then the laundry room door opens to the outside as well as to the inside. And so I want to make sure that in case that door gets opened or something, the cat and the dog don't go down the stairs and go in there. So I closed the door at the bottom of our stairs, and then I went to do laundry last night, and I couldn't get it back open. It was just completely stuck. So I had to do this thing last night where it's like I had to, like, take my basket of laundry and go out the front door and down the stairs and around the side of the house to go into the laundry room to do my laundry.
That's fantastic. Please tell me that you had like curlers in your hair, you know, that you're like a head full of bobby pins or something, cold cream on your face.
No, none of that, but I was wearing those god-awful pink and black pajama pants that I bought for Pajama Bowl.
That's wonderful. Do you suppose somebody across the street was watching?
No, I got my new neighbors next door who are like, here's the thing is that I'm living with this guy downstairs who's like Mr. Handsome, like hipster food cart guy. My next door neighbors are apparently like whitewater rafters because in their backyard they've got all of this whitewater rafting thing and they're all very, very buff and very thin. And
there, here's right
me,
in.
big pudgy white me in my pink and black pajama pants going outside in the rain with my laundry going, hey, yeah, I live here now. Bringing down the property
just a
values.
A touch of
nice
Appalachia.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So you're basically like Kevin Spacey in American Beauty, just sandwiched between, you know, infinite numbers of attractive gay men and just sort of, you know.
Pretty much.
Okay. Excellent. Fantastic. All what I did last night is this sounds really dull, but I just spent most of last night reading that Keith Richards autobiography, which, by the way, is just fantastic, because I have eschewed for the longest time. I mean, for several years, it's been a long time since I've read unless you count the Patti Smith thing, which really isn't a musical biography at all. It really is just about her time with Robert Mapplethorpe. I haven't read a musical biography, or I was talking to Mike Russell about this the other day, about the concept of working on something for a long time or spending a lot of your time working in a specific area or focusing on some specific genre or topic. And then, you know, and then what sort of like, what sort of long-term effect, you know, that has on your reading choices. In other words, if you're working on something, because I think we were talking about the, some of the stuff he's working on and just, you know, the idea that you throw yourself into some sort of specific subject matter or topic in terms of your reading or your, you know, if you're researching something and you kind of burn out on it. And I was mentioning the fact that once I got done with Bigger Than Jesus, I think with maybe a handful of exceptions that and there may be not even that, once I got done with Bigger Than Jesus, which was in 2005, because up until that point, I had just been a voracious consumer of books about music and musicians' autobiographies and books about bands and books about the sort of development of the music industry and the history of certain, you know, certain musical styles and genres. But once I got done with that, which is like 6 years ago, I was just finished. I was just done. I had no burning desire to sit around and, you know, and you know, read the next biography from one of the guys from Motley Crue or something. So it's not even that I've avoided. I just had no desire to. But the Keith Richards biography was something I was really looking forward to, and I got it for Christmas. And it's been sitting there as one of those things that I was making myself wait on it because I had like four other books that I was halfway through, and I can multitask with books, but but of course if you're reading four things at a time, it takes you a long time to get through all of them. And I made myself get through all of the things I was currently reading before I started the Richards book. But I got to tell you, it really is fantastic. I mean, if you're a Rolling Stones fan, especially, but even if you're not, even if you are just intrigued by what it is like to be the guy who's in the Rolling Stones or to be there at that sort of, you know, that turning point in not just American culture, but in world culture where rock and roll really is ascendant as an art form. And literally, and to go from being some, you know, just some dead broke dirtbag to being the guitarist for, you know, the biggest band in the world. It really is just, it's a fantastic book. And the thing about Keith Richards is he has this unique ability to always sound, and this isn't just because I'm listening to the audiobook as part of it. I mean, it really is the way it's written. And apparently he wrote it apparently he didn't have a ghostwriter. He didn't have it. It was just him sitting in front of a computer just typing it out. Although I like to think of everything that Keith Richards is being done with sort of like a quill and like a parchment. You know, like he has sort of a scroll and he's there just, you know, wreathed in cigarette smoke. But he has this ability to just to say everything in a matter-of-fact kind of way. It never sounds like he's dishing dirt or gossip. Even when he's talking about, you know, Brian Jones and his drug habits or Mick Jagger and sort of some of his diva-like behavior, it never sounds like he's a guy who's just washing his laundry in public. It sounds like it's just sort of, well, it's the way it happens, so it's the way I've got to tell it. What can he do? And he just has this very just matter-of-fact delivery. So it's just the most engrossing book. So I spent, I don't know, several hours just working the ass groove in my office chair, just reading the book. And then Lara had not watched episode 12 of The Killing. And she says, baby, got episode 12 of The Killing? I'm going to get caught up in that. And I'm like, yes. And in fact, I'll watch it with you. And so I went out and I sat and I watched the entire thing again from front to back. And this is right before. And by the way, there are no spoilers here because I don't know anything about next week's episode. I mean, there are spoilers up to and including episode 12, but not beyond because I don't know anything about the finale. Did we ever determine for a fact that next week is the final episode?
Yes.
We do know that.
Yeah, there
absolutely.
There are 13 episodes in this season.
Is it normal length, do you suppose, or is it going to be one of those double up things?
No, I think it's normal length.
All right. So it was last night, I don't know, at around, I don't know, like maybe 6 or 7, that you sent me a text message that I think I still have, actually. so I'm checking my my text last night, and then Dawn sends me something that says, wait for it. You just say, I've changed my mind. I now believe Gwen to be the killer. And Gwen is Richmond's assistant, his female chief of staff or whatever she is. And so now, upon what are you basing that?
Well, part of it, it's the thing is that I started thinking about it and realizing that one of the things the show has done over and over and over again is set us up at the end of an episode to believe something to be a reveal. And then at the beginning of the next episode, we discovered that that is not indeed a reveal, that we have been led to believe that it's something utterly different than what it actually is.
And you think we'd get smarter eventually, but that doesn't seem to happen.
Yeah, and so this episode ended with what appeared to be the irrefutable reveal that Darren Richmond is the killer. But what we actually have found out is that he's still obsessed with the death of his wife. Yes, he has been patronizing hookers, and he's creepy. That does not necessarily mean that he killed anybody. We also were led to believe, the show is very good at setting up situations that you map stuff onto it yourself. It's just brilliant because there's this entire like discovery sequence where she's in the apartment and she sends
email. Assistant send the email and it dings.
And then it dings and it comes up on his laptop. And something else has happened, and Gwen is opening the packet with all of the pictures of him.
Don't seem to show Rosie.
It could be Rosie, it could not be Rosie, but the thing is, the thing that your brain does in that situation, though, is make the assumption that she is also discovering something that she didn't already know about. And the fact is, we don't know that she didn't know about it. We don't know that she's very close to him and she's been managing his campaign. She's also been sleeping with him. So odds are she knows he's got some kind of creepy fixation. And why would she not know that he's been patronizing hookers? You think she would like sort of make that her business to know that?
I guess.
If she found out that he had something going on with Rosie, why wouldn't she, both as the angry lover and as somebody who's trying to protect his career, get rid of her?
I guess it is one of those shows where you could where it does let you project your own beliefs and suspicions about whoever is guilty at any given moment onto a sort of blank, onto a kind of template. Because the thing that I seized on, and we talked about this a bit yesterday, and then I got a bunch of emails about this, is that I am not at all convinced that Rosie's the woman in those photos. My guess would be, and this is informed a little bit by your belief that Gwen is ultimately going to be the one who's guilty. My belief is probably that those photographs are of him and his wife, that they are of Richmond and his wife, only because for two reasons. One, because that's, even though the show steers free of, you know, the killing steers away from cliche most of the time, that is a thing that we see every now and again where the other woman discovers that the guy is in fact still with, you know, with his wife, or is still, you know, is still meeting with a wife, or is getting it on with somebody else. Also, if it was Rosie, it seems like they would have shown them really closely. They would have shown them. There'd be no reason to make it a mystery. They would just show a close up of him and Rosie if it was her. There'd be no reason to obfuscate that. And the only other woman of any prominence that we have ever seen involved with Richmond or in his circle is his wife. So for some reason, he's in those photographs with his wife, and she, for whatever cause, is under the impression that that's not supposed to be happening, and yet it is happening. So maybe it's the old thing of, like, he has said, I'm leaving my wife for you, and then she discovers that they're still together or something. I don't know. Because if it was Rosie, it seems like they wouldn't have played it so close to the vest. They would have just shown you that. You know, and so that would be, so that is just more of a gut feeling than anything else. I don't have any reason for that.
But again, though, the way they very cannily do this kind of misdirection, bait and switch kind of thing, I could see it, because we actually, as you had mentioned yesterday, this was the first episode where we saw really graphic pictures of Rosie dead.
Right.
And so psychologically, it would make sense that we would also assume these other photographs are her because we've already had that seed planted.
Exactly. That's
so, I mean, I still think that those were pictures of her, and I think that it was that they are photos of Richmond meeting Rosie. I think that the misdirection was that we were supposed to think that Gwen had never known about it until that moment.
And then there's that weird, and that all ties into that campaign footage of him actually hugging Rosie at the rope line or whatever it was, that sort of Clinton Lewinsky style footage. By the way, and then here's something else. So listener Kim says, listening to your killing recap, and I don't remember this at all. So listening to your killing recap, you didn't touch on the fact that when Holder called Lyndon at the station, Holder noted that Jack was going to Chicago, but Lyndon was distracted and didn't seem to hear him. I also was apparently distracted because I don't remember
too.
That at all. So that is from listener Kim says that. By the way, let's see. I'm totally in the same page with you as to maybe his wife drowned, and that's what he was talking about while he was in the car with the girl by the river. I still think I also think it's going to end up being Gwen, says this email. Maybe Jamie, but I think Gwen. And for what it's worth, do we really know that it was Rosie in the pictures of Richmond? Because Rosie and his wife look very similar. By the way.
But then again, so do Mitch and Terry.
And then somebody,
we have a lot of dark-haired women in this show.
But here's the other thing. Somebody says, was Sunday the first time we had seen pictures of Richmond's dead wife? Because they made a great show of Lyndon looking at those photos on the mantle and establishing in our head exactly what his wife looks like. Because they had a long shot of Lyndon in Richmond's apartment looking at the photographs on the mantelpiece of the two of them getting married. And and I actually thought about this at the time. We really have turned into like Twin Peaks fans. We've just become idiots. You know what it is? We become irritating J.J. Abrams fans who are just... But then if the clock is running backward and there's a goat and the goat is Jacob's constant... I don't even know what a constant is. I'm never going to watch it. It doesn't matter. We've totally become Chris Paddock and Sarah Dillon just sitting and just nerding each other into a froth after Lost. But they spent so much time on those photographs of Richmond and his wife on the mantle in his apartment that for a minute I thought that like Lyndon was going to find something, literally something sitting up on the mantle, like she was going to find like a blood-soaked knife or something just sitting there. I kept waiting for her to find an actual physical clue sitting by those photos, because I was like, well, why else would they be showing us these photos with this long lingering shot? What is the point? The only reason for that would be to establish what his wife looks like.
Yeah.
So then, but again, you can't take anything for granted, and the people who make the show are obviously no fools, so they might have actually done that just so when they show us photographs of Richmond and let's say it's Rosie, we go, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's his wife, because they just showed us a picture of his wife. So they could be doing it just to screw with people like me.
And also just to establish that, you know, that there was actually a fairly strong resemblance between Rosie and his wife.
So confusing.
The hooker that he menaced.
And by the way,
scared.
And
earlier.
That's the other thing is that then we have no idea what's up with Mr. Creepy Billionaire Speedo Do Some Blow guy. I mean, I have no. He just seems to be there like he's just an absolute red herring.
Yeah.
I mean final thought on this, and then we should probably move on because otherwise we're just going to sit and just because I mean the thing is there's just no way to know. I mean there is just no way. I mean, unless it is some, like, Encyclopedia Brown story where there's just, you know, like, the clue is there somewhere and I'm just not seeing it, there's really no way to figure it out. So the final thing I will say is this, is that when Jamie, his creepy male campaign aide, he goes over to visit Tom Drexler, the billionaire in the Speedo, the big Lester Bangs-looking guy.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, so I got all these hookers and all this blow, stay around, let's party. And then you don't see Jamie again for the rest of the episode. So are we to assume that he did, in fact... He felt like, well, I guess this is my campaign duty. I have to stick around and do all this coke and these hookers.
I guess.
I mean, that guy appears to be there just as the wild card, because I guess it's not like it's out of the question that he would have, like, menaced a hooker or maybe killed somebody because he's a billionaire. And guys like Richmond will always clean up after guys like me. He seems to be there just to serve as, like, the wild card possibility. You know, the guy who, you know, you never know, could have done it. You know, he is the blank.
Well, and also he served the point of, as we have learned as we've gone along, we've learned a lot about Richmond's ethics being flexible.
They're malleable.
Yeah.
Ugh. All right. Well,
by the way, the news today is that The Killing has been renewed for a second season. So.
See, I'm almost tempted now just to finish this season and then just never watch it again. I mean, really, I was thinking about this yesterday on the way home. How many shows can you think of? I mean, how many times has this happened where you keep watching a show and you just wish you hadn't? You'd be like, why did I come back? Why did I keep watching this? I knew it was going to be bad. I am so tempted when this season is done, unless they just ended on something that I absolutely have to have resolved, some like massive cliffhanger. I'm really tempted to finish up the season and just call it a day and just not come back. Because then it would, you know, which on the one hand, you know, if it got really, really good next year, somehow equaled or even surpassed this, which is not like, you know, not impossible. Shows have done that sometimes. You know, Buffy did that, where it's like season one is good, season two is better. In my opinion, season three, the best of all. So that can happen. The West Wing's, second season was much better than the first. It certainly can take place. But I imagine if somehow The Killing came back and was better in the second season, I would probably hear about it. I mean, that's the thing that, like, people would say, they go, no, it's even better this year. But you take a show like Firefly where, yeah, you know, it sucks that it gets canceled, but on the other hand, at least you didn't have to watch the show's sad decline, you know? Or like with Freaks and Geeks, you never just had to stick around as the thing just started to fray at the edges. So I am...
Yeah, I like everybody, though, I get kind of, you know, fixated on shows that I really like and want them to continue to entertain me. Like, Mr. Gill I was unaware until he told me before we went on the air today that they canceled Lie to Me. Fox canceled Lie to Me, which I really enjoyed. But again, I never heard anybody else ever talking about it, so I'm not sure that anybody really, really watched it. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed it. But now it's gone, and I sort of feel like I invested myself emotionally in something and have just been like, you know, like the show broke up with me.
Yeah, well, that's, and see, I wonder, that is a thing, though, that I really am tempted to do. I really am tempted just to not swear off The Killing altogether, but just after this season is done, not watch it anymore and let the rest of the world eventually vote on it for me and tell me, you know, eventually wait to see what the sort of universal thumbs up, thumbs down ratio is on the program. You know, and just let the herd decide whether I continue watching after that, which is not the same as letting people pick your television shows for you, because I already know that it's a kind of show that it's a show I like when it's done well. But now I will let the rest of The Killing fans go on without me, and then later tell me, they're going to be, you know what it is? They're going to be like the King's Food Taster. They'll come back and they'll go, season two, avoid. Or season two, even better, or just as good, or definitely worth watching. Because then...
Or needs a little salt.
Right, because then you're not, because then you know that the decision is being made for you, or you are getting the aggregate opinion of a group of people whose tastes closely mirror your own. If it was just, you know, if I just picked up some guy off the street and said, hey, watch this show, season two, let me know if I should watch it, how do you know? But if it's a group of people who already watched season one and enjoyed it, you know that their opinion is likely to mirror your own. So,
all right.
By the way, somebody types, I think for the sole purpose of angering you, Lie to Me was a huge, big abortion of a show.
Okay. Well,
I don't even know what that means.
I liked it.
Okay, final question. Did the billionaire Tom Drexler insinuate that he had partied with coke and or whores with Richmond before?
Yes. I think he did insinuate.
I don't know one way or the other. I'm still back on the whole thing of apparently Lennon's
sure,
kid being gone to Chicago.
I don't know if he insinuated. You're right, though, when you think. I'm not sure if he insinuated or if it was just that
I think
he was
just
going to insist that it happened.
I think he was just talking about, in general, that guys like Richmond are around to clean up after guys like him.
Yeah.
Sort of in a vague, like there was no specificity given to that. All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Blah, da, da, blah, blah, blah. Blah, da, da, blah, 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 blah. Mark Lara, thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. Well, we might as well. Did you say we have a Geek Watch?
No.
Did you say we have a Geek Watch?
Sure.
Thank you. We'll start with this.
High-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... And just listen on this.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Why, hello, Don Taylor. How are you?
I'm Swella. How are you?
So I have this Geek Watch that's been sent to us. This is from Digital Life magazine by, a writer, Rosa Golihan. Golihan. Gohira. Something. This is from Rosa something, really.
Yeah.
This is from Digital Life magazine. So this was just literally just handed to me in a virtual sense. The Oxford Dictionaries Online, Here we go. The Oxford Dictionaries Online, one of the authorities in the English language, has once again taken steps to acknowledge how our obsession with the internet is gradually altering our vocabularies, Don Taylor, by adding a series of words to its virtual pages. Do you know any of the words that the Oxford Dictionary, this is the online version, not the, because the physical version is only updated like every 10 years or something. Do you know, do you have any idea what they have added? This is internet slango.
Oh, it's, is it all internet slang?
Well, they've added a whole bunch of things, but this story specifically is about internet slang and slang abbreviations and or lingo.
Not a clue. No.
No guess.
No.
Thomas Gill, do you know? Do you have a guess?
I mean, because... Yeah, no.
No, LOL, I think, is already in there.
Yeah. Lulz? They add lulz?
Oh, apparently, by the way, they don't update the real-world version anymore. There are not going to be any more real-world versions of the Oxford English Dictionary. No physical copies. It is now only online. So we have here... I will just give you a brief... in fact, here's what we'll do, Don. I'm gonna give you the word. You can tell me what it means.
Oh, all right.
Okay, so... there's
because I'm old and I don't know these things.
Exactly. It's a range of words added to the Oxford English Dictionary online version. And I will just give you the words that are tech or computer related.
Okay.
And some of these are terms. Some of them are words. Some of them are acronyms.
Okay.
Breadcrumb trail.
Is that...
It's not about actual breadcrumbs.
Is that the way you get to find the cookies?
Again, not about actual crumbs.
Well, no, but neither are cookies.
No, it has nothing to do with cookies.
Oh, breadcrumb trail? I don't know.
I didn't know this. It's a series of hyperlinks displayed at the top of a web page indicating the page's position in the overall structure or hierarchy of the site.
And that's called the breadcrumb trail.
I didn't know it was actual hyperlinks, but I have seen that, like, I think Firefox does that. I think maybe Safari does, too, where it shows you a series of greater than symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of, you know, it's like a, you know, phylum genus species kind of a thing.
Yeah, they have it at the top of Amazon pages, all kinds of things.
Yeah. You will know this one, Cyber Monday.
Oh, yeah, that's the shopping thing.
Do you know when it is?
On the Monday after Black Friday.
Which is?
Which is the day after Thanksgiving.
Yes, it is the Monday following Thanksgiving, promoted by online retailers. It's a day for exceptional bargains. Infographic, we all know what that is. That's at the USA Today thing. This is, I believe, an adjective. Insidery. I-N-S-I-D-E-R-Y.
That something is insidery? I don't know.
Thomas Gill?
I don't believe that should be a word.
I should have you competing against like a 12-year-old to see if they would, you know, some... I'm trying not to say lulls with everything now, but, you know, some young sprout to see if they'd be able to beat you with this. Insidery is proceeding from or reflecting an insider's knowledge or perspective. In other words...
Well, of course.
It is an insidery website widely read in the capital that reflects upon politics. So it is something...
It's just a stupid version
of a word we
already know.
It's like a trade publication. Yes. But it's good enough to be put in the Oxford English Dictionary. Don't hate the messenger.
I'm not.
You damn woman. How about this?
Not annoyed with you
apparently,
about this at all.
Apparently the abbreviation or nickname Lappy for laptop. That may be a British thing.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if that is a thing that is used. That sounds like a thing that we in America would judge to be stupid.
No, I've never turned on.
Life hack.
Oh, isn't that when you, like, you know, go on a diet or do something or just make wholesale changes to your actual life?
Sort of. It is a specific technique or methodology by one which addresses or solves a particular problem.
Because I actually read the website Life Hacker. So.
Like, life hack isn't, so it's like dieting isn't a life hack, but a specific approach to diet or a specific trick that you do or sort of a little gimmick that you have or procedure. That is a life hack.
Yes.
We have this. Here's a good one, Don, because this is relatable because this has been the news a lot lately. Added to the Oxford English Online Dictionary. Don Taylor, can you please tell us what is network neutrality?
Oh, don't ask me to explain net neutrality.
Well, you watch The Daily Show. You should be able to do it in small words.
No, I can't explain that in just a couple of sentences.
Really?
I mean, I know what it is, but I can't just explain it.
Okay, I will do this, and I have actually not read their definition on the page. I just saw that the word was there. So network, and Thomas Gill can tell me whether or not I'm correct about this. Network neutrality is the idea that an ISP, for example, must handle all network traffic equally without giving favor to certain kinds of data flow or information, regardless, all things being equal, of what is in that. Must treat all network traffic the same and cannot favor or restrict based on the content.
Okay, see, you did that very well.
There you go. There we go. Yeah, without favoring or blocking particular products or websites, it says. Let's see, and we'll do a couple more here, and then we will... And the rest of these, you all know. Which, I mean, we've got like Permalink, and you've got paperless, which, by the way, doesn't exist. There's no paperless office. I would almost guarantee you that we use more paper now as a society. Like, the American business uses more paper than we ever have before, like at any time, ever, ever, ever. Also added Permalink, Twittersphere, Unfollow, and finally, ZOMG.
Oh, well, yeah, that's an oh my god, but it's like super oh my god.
Here's the thing about that. I don't understand what is the derivation of that? Like, why the Z? It's a backward S? Well, okay, but why would there be an SOMG? Super oh my god. Oh, I see. So it's like 110 or something, or using the all right, I understand. Well, because some of those things are actually just they're misspellings or transpositions, like pwn.
I knew this.
All right. So that comes from SOMG for super oh my god. So it's the
backward lulls.
It's a netty way of saying. All right, okay. By the way,
netty way.
Such things as ZOMG, Twittersphere, and Unfollow are joining words already added to the Oxford English Dictionary, such as heart, as in putting a heart symbol, OMG, lol, TBH.
To be,
I got nothing. Sexting, nom nom. And
I'm sorry, nom. Nom is in the Oxford English Dictionary.
OMG, lol, TBH. Oh, to be honest, heart. Okay. Sexting, nom nom, and buttload.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, a woman named Angela Volkert, was trying to figure out what her estranged husband is up to. According to court records obtained by The Smoking Gun, she decided to use Facebook to see if she could find out what was going on in her husband's mind. She created a Facebook profile for a superficially attention-grabbing teenage girl named Jessica Studebaker. Her first step was for her creation to friend her estranged husband.
What does she mean, a superficially attention-grabbing girl?
She was
like
cute.
There's any other kind.
She was super cute.
Oh, I see.
She found some super cute
she's hot.
Picture of a super cute teenage girl.
Is she underage?
Teenager, yeah.
That's
I'm assuming
okay.
So.
Okay, that's why I'm just saying that's interesting because that's because they don't feel comfortable saying that she's hot. Mm. Superficially attention-grabbing is journalistic code for she's a hot underage girl.
Gotcha. Named her Jessica Studebaker. Had her...
Jessica Studebaker. I'm Jessica Edsel.
Had her friend the estranged husband. Her next step was to persuade a trusted friend to be Studebaker's typing fingers and entice her husband, David, into communication.
People are stupid.
This allegedly worked better than she could possibly imagine, or worse, as the case may be. Soon, the court papers declared, David Volkert was emailing his newfound friend, Ms. Studebaker, and revealing details of plans to kidnap and disappear with his children. It seems that Volkert might be technically inclined, given he owns a South Bend, Indiana business called Secured Alarms, some of whom's customers are allegedly police departments. So you'd think he might, you know, have been a little bit smarter about what he was doing.
No.
In a Facebook message he wrote to Studebaker, he said, "Okay, here is the deal. I had a GPS tracker on my van, and I took it off earlier. It was just installed on my ex-wife's van, so I can track her and know where she goes." He then allegedly made suggestions that he would find someone to take care of his ex-wife.
Uh-huh.
And the FBI allegations in these court papers suggest that David Volkert then believed he could leave for another state, and that Studebaker, whom he'd never met because, you know, she doesn't actually exist,
yeah,
would come with him and his children that he was taking away with him after he...
To create a new life like Adam and Eve.
...took care of his ex-wife.
Yes, all right.
So he has been charged with installing a listening device in his wife's car. He has not yet been charged with the death threats and the kidnapping plan.
Whose photo were they using?
I'm assuming just some random teenage girl it's not hard to find pictures of hot teenage girls on the internet.
Don't I know
as
it.
As you well know.
No. Superficially appealing is what they... That's the... that's the thing that I... In the stories like this, that is the thing that I find most interesting is, like, whose photo are they actually using for things like this? That is the most interesting element of any story that functions in this way. I always wonder what poor sod had their photo up on MySpace, and it's like, you know, and that just get like I always just sort of take it as an article of faith that at any given time in America, half the people who are posting any sort of online personals ad are using a photograph of somebody who it's not even like a misleading photograph of them. It's just a picture of someone else, like yeah. all together.
And if it's not a picture of someone else, it's a picture of them from like 15 years ago when they were much prettier.
I think if people are doing that, they're not even trying hard enough. It's like using a photograph of you, there's no need to use a photograph of yourself from 15 years ago, I would imagine, because you got to imagine there's so many pictures on the internet of people who are your approximate age, your approximate looks, but maybe like a better looking, like sometimes I will, you know, like I'll comment about somebody and they'll go, well, he's like a better looking version of whoever, or he's the guy who would play, you know, me in the movie. And so,
well, your Facebook picture is Mayim
Bialik. There you go. Or apparently the guy who hosts the show Cheaters, whose name, it's Richard Greco, but it's not that Richard Greco, I guess. So apparently, because I get a lot of email, you weren't at Keelan's listening thing because you're a bad person. But when we were there, I got into a big conversation with Walker and Cheryl and Mike Russell about this, because there's some listener who was insisting that I look like the guy who was the host of the show Cheaters, and I've never actually seen that show. And so the guy's name apparently is, I think it's Richard Greco or Greco or something. And so everybody was immediately Googling that guy on the phone. And here's what's weird is that a lot of times I don't see that when someone says, you look just like, and I just don't ever, you know, it's like when somebody says I look like Richard Dreyfuss or something, which doesn't happen a lot, but occasionally, and it's like, I don't really see that. See, that's what I'm saying.
I don't look anything like Richard Dreyfuss.
That's welcome to my world. I'm saying that I don't see that resemblance, but that is a thing that I get from time to time. And I will just say, well, thanks. I mean, I appreciate that, but I don't really see it. But I got to tell you, when they brought up the photo of the guy who hosts Cheaters, the Richard Greco guy, there was this photo, and it was a picture of him sort of laughing, like he was caught in mid-guffaw. And I got to tell you, it creeped me out a little bit. It was one of those things where I looked and I went, huh. It was just sort of like seeing like an alternate universe me. Now, granted, a more successful, better looking version of me, to be sure. But I mean, still, you know, close enough for jazz. I mean, it was a thing that would not be unrecognizable as a guy who looked like me, which is a little unnerving. Apparently, Joey Greco is somebody. Somebody is saying his name is. So anyway, okay. But that's what I always wonder about with these stories. It's like, well, what 17-year-old girl out there, you know, had her photo up that was inadvertently used in some sort of weird domestic sting operation?
Well, you also wonder, it's like, because the thing is, what happens if that was your picture and it was taken and used for something like this? And at some point, someone who knows you is reading the news
right.
and sees the screen capture on CNN or wherever. He goes, hey, Jody. Isn't this you?
Well,
like,
and
what?
And also, you've just typed. So Thomas Gill just typed the word Sarah on the screen.
Because Sarah had her MySpace stuff all stolen.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Sarah had her MySpace photos taken and used in someone else's profile, which she only. I forgot all about that. It's amazing how many things have. You know, what we are. We're like some ongoing, long-running television show where the twists and turns have to become so unbelievable over time that they don't even seem plausible. Yeah, like Star Trek or perhaps House, and then we forget about them. But yet, these are all things that happened. I totally forgot about that.
Or CSI New York, where apparently one of the detectives solved a crime while she was in a coma.
Well, sure,
she was a ghost.
So Sarah actually got a bunch of phone calls from her friends a couple years ago, because her friends had all gone to, just back when people were using MySpace, they'd gone to the, you know, there's that main page of just MySpace.com, and it was. They would always do that thing on the right-hand side of, like, hot new profiles. You know, people who's just joining MySpace. And one of the people who had, like, just joined MySpace, it was like, you know, Jennifer from Long Island, except all of the photos were of Sarah. And so the only reason she ever even found out that someone had stolen her identity / photos on MySpace is because MySpace happened to pick that person's profile as one of the hot new things, and her friends happened to see it. So that's bizarre.
Yeah.
But so my question is, like, is it the wife or the ex-wife in this story?
Estranged wife.
So the estranged wife, is she, like, did she break the law? Because it seems like she might have engaged in fraud, in fact, interstate fraud, and in fact, you know, and wire fraud. If she was actually, because the internet sort of crosses borders and boundaries, and if they were living in different states, and if she was doing this to try to win some sort of custody or settlement, you know, in a divorce, that seems like she might be in more trouble than he is. Because he never actually made moves to have her killed. She did use someone else's photograph for fraud.
Yeah, but it is against the law, though, to talk about killing someone.
It's not. I talk about killing people all the time.
No, but it's
he didn't make a deal. I'm not a cop. I'm just saying she actually, like, in point of fact, committed a crime.
Yeah.
He maybe discussed committing a crime. So I think that may be the most satisfying story, where they all go down together, which is, that's just the way that I like to see it unfold. That really is the most, that's the best way that anything can happen for me. Let's see. By the way, somebody says, oh, this is, okay, just by the way, a little update on the, as we're closing out this sort of online chicanery lulz definitional thing. So apparently, this is from Lulzsec. Apparently, somebody on Lulzsec actually posted something. This is our quote from a Lulzsec member posting this, saying, quote, "Just saw a thread on 4chan where they're trying to hunt us. Do you beatards realize that we're everything you've tried to be, you damn furries," end quote. Followed by our friend Seamus, who is tracking not only, he went from being the E3 correspondent to being the Lulzsec correspondent for us. He just says, "Dear God, please, 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 oh please, let there be an anonymous versus Lulzsec war. Please." How great would that be? That would just be the most fantastic thing in the history of the world.
As long as it doesn't like interrupt my Wi-Fi. That's all I care about. As long as I can do the things I need to do, let them have it. Let them just go crazy.
That's wonderful. Oh, I hope that happens. Okay. Let's see. Were we going to watch just now?
No.
Excellent. All right. Here's Don Taylor.
A man took human suspension to new heights this weekend when he allowed hooks to be inserted into his back and then was lifted nearly 11,000 feet into the air by a hot air balloon. The stunt was part of a Portland film production company's filming of a feature-length documentary called Feet Off the Ground. Planning for the hot air balloon ride took about 2 years. Matt Morgan, co-founder of film production company Precarious Egg and one of the producers of the film, said in a press release, "This balloon suspension is really the culmination of several years of immersing ourselves in the body modification and suspension communities." Sean Devine, also co-founder of Precarious Egg, said, "People inside this community are frequently misrepresented, with the media typically going for the shock value. The film is set largely in beautiful natural locations with the intention of exploring what else is there to look at beyond the shock value. The irony of this event is that the shock value is there, suspending from a balloon thousands of feet in the air, but we hope that the scenic beauty of the spectacle will soften what's often seen as something brutal, as well as encourage people to watch the whole film to see the true community of suspension." The man who was suspended is 34-year-old Zane Whitmore of Seattle. He used to live in Portland. He was pierced 4 times across his shoulder blades, and the balloon was released over California's Long Valley caldera. The flight lasted about 75 minutes.
Here's what I could do without. I could do without people who are into freakish things pretending they're not freakish. Just admit there's nothing wrong with it. Just admit that you're that you're some perverse whack job. I don't care.
People are so shocked by the fact that we do this like weird freakish shocking thing.
Seriously, okay, I mean, well, you're going to, you know, pierce yourself with a meat hook and hang from a ceiling fan. Like, I don't care. I mean, but society can't deal with this. It's normal. So like going around the room.
You don't get to feel all proud of yourself because you're all edgy and different, and at the same time say, people just don't understand and they think we're all edgy and different.
Yeah, and why do you have to like be really high off the ground with that? It seems like just the hanging from hooks in your back is probably, I mean, that would be sufficient.
Well, normally I think it is, but it's a stunt to get people talking about their movie. So
I'll just read this. "I dated a British girl who was into the whole being naked and having hooks jammed through your back while you hang from the ceiling thing, but she also was into making paintings with her vagina, so, you know." Mm. Okay. All right. That's not me saying that, by the way. Here's Don Taylor.
"How would you paint with your..." Okay.
What do you mean, how?
I don't know.
You own one. You tell me.
Well, I know, and I'm trying to think of it, and I mean...
Oh, people paint with earthworms. I mean, you know, seriously.
I mean, I suppose, you know, you could do it like you do, like, you know... Remember,
isn't it like a dauber?
I was thinking when you were a kid and you'd like carve things into a potato.
That's what I'm saying.
And you'd do that. It would have to be kind of like that. I just don't think of it as painting, really. Pressing, putting paint, the press, I don't know.
It's more of a texturing.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Okay.
Conservative NBC affiliate in Utah, KSL-TV, will not carry the upcoming network drama series, The Playboy Club, set at the first Playboy Club in Chicago in the 1960s. The station announced its decision on air yesterday morning. The Playboy brand is known internationally, President and CEO Mark Willis said in a statement. "Everyone is clear what it stands for. We want to make sure everyone is clear what KSL brand stands for, which is completely inconsistent with the Playboy brand." Willis also serves as president and CEO of KSL's parent company,
Bonneville.
Deseret Media Companies.
And so Deseret Media Companies and Bonneville Communications own KSL Radio, KSL TV, and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm sorry, the Deseret News, and our...
The Deseret News, as illustrated by our good friend Eric D. Snyder, who links to these occasionally, best letters to the editor of any newspaper ever.
Exactly. And because all of those corporations are in turn controlled and owned by the Mormon Church, which is awesome. So, I mean, really, that is like it's like the best setup ever, where it's like the church and actually the news organizations that cover the church are all under the same umbrella, which is exactly how you want your theocracy to be run.
Oh, sure.
It's really the only way to put it together.
Anyway, Deseret Media Companies also previously refused to carry NBC's comedy Coupling and the religiously themed animated comedy God, the Devil, and Bob. The anchor on KSL, who announced the nixing of the Playboy Club yesterday morning, described the decision as being part of the station's long-term policy to screen programming for material which significant portions of our audience might find objectionable.
Does it give the anchor's name?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
The stations stopped short of labeling the content in Playboy Club that they feel viewers might find objectionable, but ran a guest commentary on the announcement by the chairman of the Utah Coalition Against Pornography. KSL said it's working with NBC to find another station in the market to carry the show, which is slated to air Mondays at 10 p.m. The Playboy Club has already been criticized by the conservative-leaning TV watchdog Parents Television Council, which criticized the series for asking its cast to sign nudity clauses.
I'm trying to remember what KSL refused to carry when I was living there. And that was like 10 years ago, 15 years ago. When I was living in Utah, KSL did, there was something that came out, and the KSL just said flat out that they weren't going to carry it. They refused. It was Schindler's List. Because there was that whole thing about Schindler's List being on television unedited, I think with some of the nudity and the language intact, because, you know, blah blah blah, artistic vision, blah blah blah, yeah, whatever, serious drama. And so I think it was KSL that said that they got into a whole, you know, for a religion that so closely mirrors and parallels Judaism, they seem to get into an awful lot of kerfuffles with the Jewish community. And the most recent was, yeah, when they wouldn't air Schindler's List, and there was a huge whole deal about it. So it's just the most. Here's the great thing about working for any of those communication organizations in Utah, or at least was back when everything in radio was done via Arbitron diaries, where you would write down your listening, is that you just viewed it as sort of your sacred obligation if you were a Mormon to listen to the church-owned media organizations. And so you would just write down, I listen to KSL every day, all day, which is how they would get like a 90 share constantly, because you would believe like it was your duty to listen to the church organ and not to listen to the organ of the evil mainstream press. So,
and even if you weren't, you probably lied.
That's the thing. You completely lied about it. Also, KSL has got incredibly hot female on-air anchors. So that's why I was asking about that. So it's a chick named Hope Woodside, who used to be on the news there, who was...
I could try and find out for you.
Nah, it didn't really matter.
Okay. Let's do our Hick Watch.
Here's your Hick Watch for Tuesday, right here in the Rick Emerson radio program.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering on around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Oh, yeah.
Here is Don Taylor.
Mute something here. There we go. An alleged attack with a baseball bat in Bristol, Tennessee, has led police to the discovery of multiple marijuana plants and one arrest. According to a report at the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office, the incident occurred at approximately 10:40 on Sunday night. Police were called to 472 Kent Hook Hill Road in reference to an assault. One of the residents, a 32-year-old woman, told police her brother had wanted to borrow her car. She allegedly told Aaron Witt, 31, who also lived there, that she did not want him driving his druggy buddies around in her vehicle, prompting an argument. Hmm. Witt allegedly ripped a windshield wiper from his sister's car, a fight that ensued between Witt and his sister's boyfriend, with Witt eventually entering the house to retrieve a baseball bat. Witt allegedly hit the man in the head twice with the bat, threatening to kill him if he did not leave. Police report that the victim was transported to a medical center. The extent of his injuries were not specified. While placing Witt under arrest for aggravated assault and vandalism, officers allegedly noticed 8 marijuana plants in the home's backyard. Witt reportedly admitted to growing the plants and consented to a search of his room. Inside the room, officers found 3 marijuana pipes, half a Suboxone pill, a switchblade, scales, a roach clip, and the baseball bat used in the assault.
What is Suboxone?
I don't know. I've never heard of it before. Suboxone. Suboxone. Witt was additionally charged with manufacturing controlled substance, possession of Schedule 3 drugs, possession of drug paraphernalia, and possession of a prohibited weapon.
Hey, let me ask you this. Did you say that you'd... Maybe not. Did you say that you'd take an Ambien?
No, I've never taken it.
Okay, why was I thinking you had?
We did have a whole thing where we were talking at one point about how I was having trouble sleeping and I was going to the doctor, and I was specifically saying that I didn't want to take
it. Oh, because you don't want to be sleep driving.
Yeah, I didn't want to like be going to the convenience store half asleep or something like that.
All right, excellent. All right, there you go. There's
sleep shopping.
Your Hick Watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. How about you?
It is nice to see a little consistency that no matter what the weapon of murder or assault is, they never actually think to just throw it away.
No. And I do like any news story where they actually quote the person and say, and I told him I did not want him driving his druggy buddies around in my vehicle.
Yeah, that doesn't really, that's an admonition that never really works. That sort of, that doesn't, I think, have the desired outcome most of the time.
To which he responds, oh, yeah, I will rip the windshield wiper off of your car.
I mean, can't you, I know that we live in a city with a lot of bridges and all, but I mean, there's like 70 places within a mile of my house where you could dispose of a weapon.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably, I would imagine, I mean, I don't know if this is true, but you canvass my neighborhood, you probably find 7, 8, 9, 10 weapons, like now, just sitting in various dumpsters and trash cans. I mean, for the love of God, it's not that hard. Let's do a couple more here, and then we'll take a break on the and come back on the other side.
House Speaker John Boehner is scheduled to play golf on Saturday with the president, vice president, and the governor of Ohio, Boehner's home state. He says what's being called the Gulf Summit is nothing more than a round of golf.
This is Boehner.
Now, Saturday is about golf, and I hope it's just about golf.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Boehner, speaking to reporters at the Capitol, says the way government spends money has to change.
We are not going to raise the debt limit without significant cuts in spending that should exceed the amount in which we raise the debt ceiling.
What?
And real changes to the way we spend the American people's money.
It's just that it's like his jowls are becoming so massive that the slurring is unavoidable at this point. It's everything just sort of comes out like it's been compressed in the front of his mouth.
Plus, he's just kept talking and not really saying anything.
No, of course not.
So a woman named Marie Chester apparently has a very, very large purse.
Purse, you mean paintbrush?
No, I mean actually handbag purse.
And by handbag?
Because she was actually able to steal 6 full racks of ribs and 2 packs of oxtails before she left a Save A Lot store in Fort Pierce, Florida.
And by oxtail, you mean what?
Oxtails.
What do you mean an oxtail? Is that like a foxtail?
Well, oxtails are often anymore, they're cowtails, but they're the tails of the animal. They're oxtails. They're a cut of meat.
How could it be a cow? I don't understand anything here. Isn't it?
Hmm?
Oxen are cows.
Well, yes, but...
Okay, everyone stop. First of all, Tom is noting that oxen are cows. I'm asking about, this isn't, because like a foxtail is not a foxtail, it's a broom.
Right.
So this is an actual tail from an animal.
Right.
Okay, all
and
right.
And it's the vertebra with still some meat on them.
Okay.
And you purchase them and you can use them to make soups and stews and
okay.
things like that. So anyway, so she had taken 6 full racks of ribs and 2 packs of oxtails. This was in Fort Pierce, Florida. A Save-A-Lot manager told police last week he saw Chester enter the business and head to the meat department. He saw her loading a shopping cart before she went to aisle 8, and then he watched her fill her purse from the shopping cart before she paid $1.73 for her merchandise at register 3. He observed the defendant exit the store with the meat in her purse, passing all points of purchase. Ribs and the oxtails were valued at $57.60.
I like the idea, by the way, that it's that she didn't actually. It wasn't like she stole everything. She just stole some of the. She actually, she didn't want to make a complete robbery, on her agenda. So she actually paid $1.75 or whatever.
Right. So it looked like she was actually, and apparently thinking no one would notice that she had the world's largest purse stuffed with meat.
No, of course not. And that's the thing that I typically notice.
Yeah. According to this news story, the report didn't list a volume measurement for the purse.
So really it could have been like some sort of purse of holding that just contained everything in the entire world.
Yes. Oxtails are the tails of male or female cattle. And if you go to about.com, it will tell you that they make a flavorful beef stock The robust beef flavor comes from the bones and marrow, but the meat is also very tasty. The rendered stock will be thick and gelatinous due to the collagen released from the bones.
I don't like gelatinous things typically. I mean, just as sort of a general rule in my life. Ugh. Okay.
So,
let's do one more here, and then we'll...
Okay.
It was something without a reference to gelatin in any way, if you've got that handy.
God, everything is gelatin-related today. What am I... Okay, how about this?
I'll just give you the... Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
The folks at Goodwill are used to receiving all kinds of donations, but a recent drop-off left some of its employees a little spooked. This is a town called Fenton. Fenton, Michigan. An old cardboard box marked Grandma's Urn was left at a Goodwill store in Fenton, Michigan.
What do you suppose was in there?
Well, employees say they knew right away something was different about this donation. Goodwill store manager Alan Rickman.
Really?
Well, with a Y. Said... We all sort of looked at it and said,
Alan Rickman?
Oh, yeah. We all sort of looked at it and said, is this what I can't do Alan Rickman. Is this what I think it is? And sure enough, it was, he said. After making the unusual discovery, Goodwill decided to hang on to the urn for a little while, hoping the rightful owner would come back and reclaim it. After 2 months, it was turned over to the Michigan State Police. Lieutenant Stephen Sipes said, it was the first time I've had this happen in my 20 years. It was a bit unusual, and we just hope to get it back to its rightful owner. Police are now trying to track down the person who dropped Grandma off at the Goodwill.
I don't think that's a person who wants to be found. I think that is a person that is, it's like those kids that would just, get kicked out of Nebraska by their parents, because that loophole in the state law. I don't think there's going to be a lot of people answering the phone at that house for the next few years. I mean, don't you think there should be some sort of reality show done in, like, the lost and found or drop-off room or whatever, like the evidence control room of like your inner city police department, your metro police department, your big city police department, just where they just find random stuff on a subway, like five sets of human teeth for no reason, just there, And like, what are you going to do? Well, nobody's going to come ask for those probably. It's like they did this, I think it was on... It wasn't Ripley's Believe It or Not, but it was one of those old, sort of the forerunner of today's reality shows back in the early 80s, where they went to the Lost and Found Room of the O'Hare Airport, Chicago O'Hare, and it was just awesome. I mean, just the stuff. I mean, they would just be, and like they had, for example, they had this one rack that was just nothing but bowling balls that had been left behind in the airport. This is back before they just blew everything up. And they had like, I had like 75 bowling balls that had been left there, and they're like, you'd think people come back for these? It's $150 or whatever. And like, they were just there, though.
Yeah, have you ever seen like a news story or anything on the Big Lots of things that TSA sells on Craigslist and stuff now, because they take away everybody's lighters now. So what they'll do is then every once in a while you'll just be able to go online and they're auctioning off a lot of 50 lighters or something like that.
Well, it's like those cop sales from like drug dealers or something where they just let it stack up in a warehouse.
100 folding knives,
They, the number of things, there was another variation on that same show. I think that maybe Mike Rowe did something like this a few years back, but it was at the Lost and Found Department of the, and see, this is where it could make an entire series. I think it was the Lost and Found Department of the New York City Transit Authority. And so it was all the stuff found on subways. And one of the most frequently left behind and then never claimed items, prosthetic limbs. And they had this whole, and he's like, well, here's our hand rack. And it was a whole rack of just hands. And then there was one of arms and there was one of legs. It's like, how do you even lose your prosthetic leg and not be aware of it?
And why would
how do you even get off the subway to leave it behind?
And why would you not, like, try to get it back?
Seriously. And
do you just assume somebody would just go, hey, free hand, and not turn it in? Because if I found one, I wouldn't.
Also, it's not like you're calling in and you're describing a shoe or something. Or like a glove. It's a black glove with five fingers. You're going, it's my leg. What is your shape? Yeah. Well, it's shaped like my leg. Have you found one today? I mean, how many of those could you possibly find? And the answer is they find dozens of them every year.
Wow.
And then they just sit there. And so I assume that there's some sort of fascinating story behind every unclaimed leg, at the subway Lost and Found. It really is just it astounds me.
If you were on like the Max or something and you found a leg, or you were just walking around your neighborhood and you found a prosthetic leg, would you turn it into the police or would you just go, oh my God, I now have my own prosthetic leg?
Well,
that's
a bad example probably because I would probably not be given a choice because my wife would probably because my father-in-law's got, he's all without legs and whatnot, but for many years had prosthetics, and so that's a sort of like, I don't think I would be, I think if I decided to keep that at home,
Laura would say, someone needs that.
Seriously, she'd just have to raise it, she'd just have to look at the leg and raise an eyebrow at me and just go, really? You're keeping someone's prosthetic leg, and then it's like I would have to take it back. If she didn't know, or if I was, if, you know, God forbid, if she had been hit by an asteroid or something the week before and was no longer around, I might be tempted to keep that.
Yeah.
You know what I did have for a long time, again, until she made the observation rather stridently that it was time to throw it out. I'm always fascinated by just spare shoes that you see in the middle of the road, just like a single shoe in the middle of the street, because I figure that's almost always from an auto accident. That is almost always one of those things where a guy gets hit by a car and then it's like they find him, but they never find the shoes. You know, because how many times you hear about that where it's like the Stand By Me thing, you know, where it's like Ray Brower gets knocked right out of his Keds or whatever. So there was this, it makes me sound like a horrible person, but what are you going to do? So there was this accident at the, by First and Arthur down here. And there had been, because I was on the way to work one day and it was getting in my way of my commute. And I was like, well, what's up with here? And then I figured out that the slow in the traffic was caused by this huge snarled accident. And I don't know if anybody died or not, but there was this huge, you know, two cars that hit each other and this whole thing. But then as I was driving to work the next day, and it was in this sort of fork in the road, so there was this sort of triangular patch of cement that cars didn't drive over. It was like a little island of cement. And right in the middle of the island where the accident had been, there was just this single black sneaker that was sitting there, which I absolutely, you know, was certain came from the accident. So I just pulled it over and took it, and I pulled over and I took it home. And I had it sitting on my writing desk at home for like a year.
Death sneaker.
Until she finally just said, where is that from? And I said, I got it from this guy. And she said, what guy? And I said, this guy that he was in a car accident. And she said, you took a shoe from an auto accident? And I said, maybe. And she said, you took something from, and I had to explain that I didn't believe it was the same as taking something from a crime scene.
No.
Because it was the next day and they left it behind. But she found that, I think, unacceptably morbid.
Adding to the list of things that I have found, by the way, left behind in my new place, along with the giant grow light and like an ancient toaster. Like a really old,
like in the '50s.
Like a silver metal toaster, and the Barca lounger that's very comfortable, but like one arm is coming off. Also, what looked to be a brand spanking new, but enormous pair of golf shoes.
That's odd.
Yes,
maybe that's a thing that they wait. Do golf shoes have spikes on the bottom?
Yeah, they have the kind of. These have the kind of rubbery ones on them. Some golf shoes have metal spikes. These have the rubbery.
Because I was thinking maybe they were used to walk around and aerate the grass or the lawn or the soil that they planted their crops in. But maybe not.
They're clean as a whistle and they look brand new and probably terribly expensive. They're like Nikes or something. But yeah, and they're huge. They're like. Like probably size like 11 or something. They're enormous.
So this is some sort of karmic exchange for the two cycle vibrator you left behind.
Yes, that's it. I lose the vibrator. I get
gain a toaster.
Grow lights, a toaster, and golf shoes.
Well, I mean, that shows that the universe believes your vibrator to be useful. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That it's worth all those things. Okay, well, let's do something else. We'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side. Still to come, we got your penis watch and clown watch. And stay right there. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's Tuesday. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Lost and half insane.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Feelings from a white that's on, isn't it? I'm so tired.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's not even it's not even so much that I have, like, the Edward Cullen hair today. It's just, as Todd the Corpse would say, this is just one of those days where Rick has his hair set on tall. It just it gets a little
stand-up-y.
Well, because the thing about my hair, Don, here's what you're going to know, is that I get my hair cut every single week. Mm-hmm. And every other week, have I talked about this? Every other week I get just a sort of trim, you know, where I just get my sideburns and I just get this sort of edging done. And then on alternate weeks, I get a more substantial, you know, trim. So, you know, sometimes it's just the sideburns, sometimes it's the whole thing.
Do you pay full haircut price every week?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, okay, good.
No, that would be stupid.
I don't know.
No, but my whole thing is that I don't like looking like the guy who just got his haircut. You know, because it's always too short. Well, as you've said, I mean, I think your hair looks fine, but you come in, you're like, and it's too short.
Yeah.
And so my whole thing is that I get my sideburns done every other week, which I frankly would like to do myself, but that just, as most guys know, that never ever works out. It's like trying to trim your own eyebrows. That is a recipe for failure. So I get a place where I go every other week and they do my sideburns for like $3. But then on alternate weeks I get the hair trimmed, because what I always tell them is I don't want it to look as though my hair is ever different. I would like my hair to look more or less the same all the time. But the result of that is that at any given moment, my hair is always just like 4 or 5 days away from looking dangerously overgrown. So when I miss my Monday haircut, as I did yesterday, then it's all with the big pot. And I have no product in it today.
You should consider wearing a wig.
It would be
the same every single day, always.
Then I'd get Gene Simmons hair. So it's the lack of... then I'd look like Mike Russell. Not that he has a wig, but where his hair is just sort of... Yeah. He's like Carl Click, where every time you see him, it's like the hair is just perfect, and there's never a strand out of place.
I've told you my goal that someday when I'll be older and I'm just going to wear wigs all the time. Did I tell you about that?
No, I don't believe so.
I've always had this thing where I've thought it would be awesome to just cut my hair really, really short and have a series of wigs, but just vastly different wigs. So I could have like a different personality depending on my day. And then this was reinforced after I read the food critic Ruth Reichel's books. And she talked about when she was a food critic in New York and having to disguise herself. And she would go to this wig place and the first step was to get a wig. And then she would create an entire personality with this wig and buy clothes that would go with that wig so that she could be like kind of a dumpy little middle-aged woman, you know, from New Jersey, or she could be like somebody who's just flown in from Europe and has
so
like
it's not
blonde,
to be recognized.
But, right, and not to be recognized. But she also just like would be sort of different with each thing. And also she found herself behaving differently in the restaurant because she would be playing the character. And I just thought that would be really great to like be able to get up in the morning and say, you know,
who shall I be today?
Yeah, I'm in a long dark hair kind of a mood today, and do that and then wear my goth clothes. And then maybe the next day, like, you know, put in like the blonde kind of, you know, soccer mom flip and like tie a pink sweater around my neck and do that. But then I realized that would probably like really, really throw you off because you like consistency. And if I came in looking like different like all the time.
I'm not completely crazy. You come in wearing different clothes, kind of, and that doesn't throw me off.
I know,
off.
But if I came in wearing different wigs.
Now, here's the thing.
And completely different makeup and stuff. I mean.
Here's what you need to know is that I used to do the show with Kim Morgan. And Kim, in fact, did have a whole rack of wigs at home. Like in her room, she had all these like styrofoam heads with a whole bunch of wigs, and she would just kind of rotate through them. I don't know that I ever actually saw Kim's real hair all the many years that I knew her. I don't know that I have no idea whether I ever saw anything that was like actually natural on top of her head, and they all looked good, but it was she would come in and she'd be like full on like bottle blonde looking, and then the next week she would have like this weird like Marla Singer hair going on, and it was
work with her every day. I mean, if you had to sit with somebody every day, and I assume you'd get used to it fairly quickly, but you know, at first it would really throw you off, I would imagine.
No, I'd develop some sort of mental defense where I would just not even see you. I'd look over and it would just be Harvey the Rabbit or something. I would just look over and it would be like in that Todd Solondz movie. I'd look over and it would just be a big red bar where you're sitting.
But that's a goal. That's a goal for my future, is that at some point I think I'm going to do that. I've looked forward for a long time to my mother's friends reached that point where they were older ladies, and a couple of them just realized they didn't want to deal with the hair salon thing all the time. So they just started wearing wigs. And a couple of them, I didn't even realize they wore wigs. The wigs were so good.
Right.
But I thought, aha, there's something to this.
By the way, speaking of the Gene Simmons wig thing, did you see the deal with him and Shannon Tweed on the Today Show?
No.
So I didn't see it either. I hadn't seen it when it was live. I didn't see a lot till last night because I was doing the Outlook Portland taping last night, and Cheryl asked me, she's like, did you see Gene Simmons on the Today Show? I think it's the Today Show. Where's Kathy Lee Gifford these days?
That's the Today Show.
Is it the Today Show?
Yeah.
So Gene Simmons and Shannon Tweed were on there to promote the upcoming season of Family Jewels. And it was apparently a huge deal. It was one of the biggest trending topics on Twitter last night. Because Gene and Shannon Tweed are on there. And there was the only reason I asked you if you'd seen it is because there was much made of the fact that Gene Simmons and Shannon Tweed seemed to have that there seemed to be a legitimate having a legitimate fight on the show, or not even a fight, that they were just not very happy with each other, because at one point Kathy Lee Gifford they had these photographs of Gene with another woman, and there was, and Shannon Tweed did not seem very happy about it, and Gene seemed sort of uncomfortable about the whole thing, and Shannon Tweed made some reference to the fact that the last couple of years she made some statement of very, very much like, you know, we've been staying together for the kids. She goes, well, our kids are, you know, fully cooked now. They're off to college. They're done, you know, and that's what we've been holding it together for, or something. And there was a lot of debate on the internet about whether or not there was some sort of splitting up, or there was some sort of visible fracture between the two of them, or whether it was just some sort of elaborate ruse for the new season of the show.
Yeah, because I just pulled it up, and one of the first things I found was they had asked Kathy Lee Gifford and what's her name, Hoda Kotb or whatever her name is.
Hoda Kotb?
Whatever her name is. Hoda Kotb? Is that it? Hoda Kotb?
Hermione Hoba?
Okay, and then and asked them what they thought, and they were like, and they said, well, we didn't know what to think, because sometimes these people come on and you don't know if they're playing with you or if they're just, you know. So yeah, so it could have just been for publicity to get people talking about their damn show.
I'm not sure. I watched it, and it seems like Gene was certainly it's Gene's portion of it, because it's not like he can't act, but he didn't seem to be. It seemed like he was sort of faking his way through the entire thing. I'll let you watch it at some point, that you can sort of weigh in on it. But she may or may not have been genuinely pissed. They may or may not have been actually busting up. But Gene, for his part, seemed to be playing the part really badly, if it was supposed to look real. But then that might have actually been him being caught in a weird, uncomfortable moment and attempting to play it up as though it were sort of staged. I mean, he's a sharp enough guy. He might actually do that, actually be trying to play it off as though it were bad acting, thus to divert from the fact. Because I can't. The big discussion we had yesterday at Outlook, we were talking about this, is like the idea that you could some. Here's the thing about Gene Simmons and Shannon Tweed, who are a fascinating couple anyway, because they've been together for 28 years, not married, but they've been together forever. Is that if you see Shannon Tweed interviewed by herself, and I might actually have, do you have the video clip up by chance? I don't know if the page you were on just now actually has the clip of the interview.
Thing? Yeah, I've got it here.
Or you might actually play a little bit of it, because the thing that's fascinating about them is if you see her interviewed by herself, people have asked her flat out, they've just said, do you and Gene have an open relationship? And they're not married, but said, do you and Gene have an open relationship? And Shannon Tweed will say no. She says point blank, if she's asked about it, they don't have an open relationship. And yet, you know, Gene Simmons' whole thing is obviously that he's not going to be bound by society's rules, and he's not going to let the man, you know, tell him exactly how he should behave inside a relationship or in a marriage or whatever. And also, you know, he's Gene Simmons, and you got to figure he's just like stooping everything that has two legs, and sometimes not even that. And Diana Ross at one point talked about going over to his house when she was dating Gene Simmons way back in the 70s or the early 80s. Diana Ross talked about going over to his house, and Gene had on his coffee table this massive photo album in which he had a Polaroid of every woman he had ever been with, at least since getting a Polaroid. And so he had just thousands of Polaroids of just these skis groupies just giving it up in some hotel room. And she actually said, she goes, Gene, this is kind of disgusting. You should put this away. And the great thing about Gene Simmons, because at that point, I mean, maybe not dissimilar to now, he had like no idea of like how actual humans interact with women. And so she was all horrified about this photo album with all of these groupies in it. And he actually just, he goes, well, I thought I left it out. I thought you'd be kind of impressed. And she says she had to like explain to him, like, nobody wants to see it. Put that away. And so,
well, I went on a blind date with a guy who turned out to be like really super creepy. And among the things that I realized, I showed up, he was just wearing these gym shorts and he was all sweaty. He goes, I just got back from working out, I gotta get in the shower. And I'm like, okay. So he went and got in the shower, leaving me alone in his apartment, where he had left a whole bunch of credit cards out on the table, just almost like they were displayed, so I could see he had credit cards.
This is how much debt I have.
And he had huge stacks of Playboy magazines on his coffee table.
Not just a reader, a collector.
Yeah. So it was like,
yeah.
So it was already going poorly by the time he
guys have a weird idea of what chicks find to be hot. I mean, that's an understatement, I think, of massive proportions. But if you ever see Shannon Tweed asked point blank, she denies that they have an open relationship. But it's like I don't even cover the Gene half of the equation, because everybody knows every time that is so much a part of his persona that he just stoops everything, and he's fine with it, and he lives life by his own rules and whatever, which, you know, I don't care. But she, so the only thing I can figure out there, I mean, the only plausible explanation. Because somebody said, I think it was Keelan said, well, maybe Shannon Tweed is sort of, you know, deluding herself or whatever. But it's like, you can't possibly. I mean, there's no. I know that not just women, but I mean, in this context, I know that women have the capacity to delude themselves about the guy they're with. But you couldn't delude yourself about Gene Simmons.
No.
I mean, there's no, you know, that's not possible. So the only thing I could come up with, the only conclusion is that maybe they have some weird agreement inside. In other words, maybe the agreement is that for image sake, he pretends that he's some Lothario out there just like getting on with every woman on the planet, you know, that she agrees to that because of like the Gene Simmons brand and the Gene Simmons image. But that the understanding is that he doesn't actually do that. They don't really, in point of fact, have an open relationship. That would be the only explanation for why she just consistently says they don't, because why wouldn't she just say it? I mean, if they said, don't you and Gene Simmons have an open relationship, she would just say yes. So I don't get the whole. There's something very confusing going on there. Do we have
here's the actual
clip.
Okay, here's.
So, enjoying the photos. And I'm.
Yeah, but that's just. We just went for.
I know. We just. I'm sick of hearing it. Sick of seeing it, and I'm sick of living with it.
I have no idea. Listen, I never met these girls before. They were there.
Jeannie, please don't play me for a fool.
Oh.
Well,
it's tense in the studio. I got to tell you, folks.
Body language.
I've had you both on many, many times. We love you guys, but this concerns me. This is you're in deep pookie, Gene.
Oh, kill me now.
In deep pookie.
So, Gene, what you just said, that you didn't know those girls except for from that photo?
Please.
What he means is he didn't know their name.
It was a business.
Please, Gene.
Dinner. And you should always have flowers on the table. Wasn't it a nice day today? Did you notice?
Here's the thing. Oh, you guys have been together 26 years.
Yeah, 28.
28.
No, those last two were a bitch.
Okay. But you knew, didn't you know what you were getting to, Shannon? I mean, the kiss,
really?
The rock stars, tell me.
You know what your mate tells you to be true,
yeah.
Right? If somebody tells you something,
sure.
You believe them or you don't believe them.
Right.
And you go forward.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So, oops. Hi.
Positioning my microphone.
Is that what you're doing?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, then what are you guys going to do about this? You're going to...
What am I going to do?
Yeah, Shannon.
What's he going to do?
Either one could answer that.
Go ahead.
Well, it's...
She looks genuinely pissed.
See, but... Men,
Please don't lump yourself in with other men are good.
Oh, God. I'm so happy to be here.
There's some really good ones over there on that couch I'd like to get a hold of.
Have a mint.
Thanks.
I distract.
So we're going to see in this whole new series,
you're going
to
see
this relationship
happens.
Unraveling, right? To this point,
well,
so did you
it's
have
pretty much unraveled?
Did you have a fling with those girls, or was it just a picture?
It's
had a fling with many girls.
Did you?
We, if somebody, look, they're taking our photo right now.
Taken out of context.
No, they're just,
taken
no, that's
out,
just,
taken
that's
out
our
of
local,
context.
I've never seen you tongue-tied.
I've, very good. I've never seen those two girls before until we...
You called them.
No, I didn't call them. Our...
Your people.
Our people called them.
Uh-huh.
There were lots more. There were 10 of them at the table. I was finishing off a real estate deal. And on the way out...
You need girls for that. I mean, who doesn't need girls to sell a house?
Okay, so...
So that's the whole thing is so... It's suspicious that at the end that they ask Shannon Tweed about it, and she sort of, you know, goes back to the well. I guess you'll have to see on this season. On the other hand, she makes money off that show too, so she has no motive to give it all away. But I'm just unsure because she seems legitimately pissed off.
Yeah.
She seems upset about something, whether or not it is this.
Then again, they went after that, and they did two more appearances that day on different talk shows and. It's possible it could be both. She really is genuinely pissed, and it's like, okay.
But she knows how to make, you know.
Right.
We're doing a
reality show, so let's play this to
Well, that's
to
the
get
thing. Yeah, because even if she's pissed off, she knows that that's what's going to get people to watch, and she's going to, you know, and Shannon Tweed's obviously not hurting for money, but I mean, she, you know, especially if there is some actual, some bust up in the offing, you know, you might as well make it while you can. So if she can maximize the whatever cash she's going to make off this next season of Family Jewels, she might as well, which would explain it. The whole thing about that relationship that I just find so fascinating is like you just wonder what is the actual understanding or what is the actual arrangement? In other words, what grounds would she possibly have to be pissed off? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense at all. So anyway,
it may be an arrangement like I've always assumed that Bill and Hillary Clinton have, which is like, you know, we have a business arrangement and a friendship and a marriage, and you do what you're going to do, but it's like, try and just, you know, don't embarrass me. And if I'm asked, I will say, you know, no, we have a solid marriage and he doesn't fool around, and I'm horrified to hear about this.
So it's just don't get your photo taken with, because there was that thing that came out, it was like him and that Swedish model. Did you ever see that sex tape, the Gene Simmons sex tape?
Oh God! No.
Oh, it's horrifying.
Oh God!
It's so,
no.
I wish that I hadn't watched it. I wish with everything in me that I could just scrub that from my soul. It was just this. And the reason that you know it was him, by the way, is because there was some Swedish model who apparently had a tape of her and Gene getting it on, and then Gene, being Gene, filed when she started to sell it. He actually filed a lawsuit claiming copyright over it. it was my hotel room, my camera. Therefore, it belongs to me. And if anybody's going to sell it, it's going to be me, Gene Simmons. And so he filed this whole restraining order to keep her from selling it by asserting his copyright as owner of it. So that's what gave validity. Which, by the way, is the same thing that Dr. Laura did with the photographs that were taken of her. Look, don't get me wrong. I'm all Rick Emerson is all for, you know, for meaningless promiscuous sex. Have at it. You're dead for a long time, so whatever. Live as John Bon Jovi would say, live while you're alive. But that's good. Like A, either in theory, or B, when I don't have to see it, and when it's not like Gene Simmons. Seriously, he couldn't even get his pants off. It's like they were just down at like his knees or something.
Come on.
Like that, and again, if you hear, you know, that's a thing that is only sexy if you're reading about it in the Penthouse forum. When you actually just see like some spongy, pale ass white man just shoving his pants down to his knees, and, you know, it's just, and then there's just a whole lot of, you know,
yes.
as Sam Kinison once said, it's like you're just hearing a sick polar bear at the zoo, you know? Just a lot of, you know, just like, why? Aww. Just put it out of its misery. What kind of zookeepers are you? Okay, I'm sorry I talked about all that. At the news desk, here's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Well, Burger King in Japan has decided to make a move. They're dropping their slider-style BK Bites. And instead, they've created burgers that you can get with a chicken patty or with Spam. And they're aiming it at the ladies.
Of course.
What women want, women get, is the tagline for the Spam and BLT mini combo at Burger King in Japan, which the chain describes as lighter and suitable for women.
I guess that's not terribly surprising, given the penetration of Spam into a lot of, I mean, well, like Hawaii is the example that everybody gives. So what is it, Thomas? You'd know this. So what is the cultural relationship between Hawaii and Japan, or is there some sort of like
most,
a?
Most of Hawaii is owned by.
But I mean, just in terms of settling and where everybody's from, is there some sort of cross-cultural something that happened in Japan with Hawaii? Okay. Because, you know, Hawaii, like, I mean, there's something there, but like the average Hawaiian eats like 10 cans of Spam a year or something.
Spam ended up being, we also had during a little thing called World War II, we had a lot of servicemen going to Japan and back and forth. And Hawaii was, of course, a huge U.S. naval base.
Right.
And that's how Spam ended up in Hawaii, and the Hawaiians found that they just loved Spam.
They just can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's the thing where it is, or it is like emblematic of Western culture somehow, and that was the initial appeal. Because not unlike we have a fetish for certain Japanese cultural items, the Japanese have a fetish for a lot of cultural items from America. So I wonder if that was the initial point of interest. Like, oh, here's some zany American food. Let's try it. And then they went, oh, it's delicious and good for you. And so now, bam. I talked to my friend.
I like that they're just saying the Spam sandwiches, though, are like, and, you know, for women,
well,
for ladies.
I mean, you know, sure. Because the thing about Spam is it's all I know pork doesn't really have white meat, but there is like lighter meat. Like in terms of pork, there's lighter meat and there's heavier meat, right? In terms of fat content, isn't that true?
Sure, sure.
Isn't like pork shoulder or something is lighter on fat? So I think that's probably wise because Spam is relatively, calorically speaking, it's a relatively low calorie food as compared to most meat and certainly compared to most pork products.
I wouldn't know.
Well, yes, you would, because you understand how food works.
How food works, but I don't really know much of anything about Spam. You know, I have never tasted Spam.
I have never
actually eaten it.
Not bad at all. Spam is just pork shoulder. That's all it is. It's just pork shoulder with spice and clove.
It's spiced ham. Well, yeah. That's where the name comes from.
Right. So it's specifically the shoulder of the pig, which means that it's very low in fat. If you've had like any of the like, sort of like the really like the cheap like downscale like pressed luncheon meat, mm-hmm. just imagine like a more textured big thick slice of that. I mean, it's actually not bad at all, except it's not as that pressed luncheon meat is very sort of wet. It has like a real kind of like a slick feeling to it, and Spam actually is somewhere between a regular sort of dry ham and that lunch meat in terms of its texture. The biggest problem Spam has, frankly, is just its public image in the continental United States. I mean, it's just the fact that it became sort of a punchline. And that is, I think, because a lot of servicemen had to eat it regardless of whether they wanted it or not because it was tinned and lasted forever. And so they were just getting it day in and day out. And like anything like that, you just come back and you don't ever want it again. Here's the strange thing. Like my friend Brent, who's in Portland's own the Muddy River Nightmare Band, I was having dinner with him and his wife last year or something. We were talking about when he and the rest of the band went to Japan, and they were doing that whole Ramones thing of they had just been traveling just around Japan and around, I don't know, just going from one tiny place to another in this van that was always breaking down and nothing worked and it just sucked, and they were just like eating drinking from mud holes by the side of the road and just no money, and they weren't anywhere near a large city. And so when they finally got into, I guess it was Tokyo, they finally got there and they saw a McDonald's over the horizon, and they were just like, it was the most beautiful sight they had ever witnessed, just the golden glow of American style fast food beckoning them. And he went in, and and the people behind the counter didn't speak English, and so they get a lot of tourists there, so they had the big picture menu, and he saw something that looked very much like a quarter pounder, and he was just like, and he pointed at it, and he like held about three. He's like, three of these now, and they immediately served it to him, and then he took a huge bite, and it was just covered in fish sauce.
Oh,
and he said it was just, and it was like, regardless of whether or not you actually want something covered in fish sauce, which you might, he said it was just not, he said it was the saddest moment of his life because he had just been craving something that was American style McDonald's, and to just get a mouthful of seaweed and fish, it was just not what he was expecting.
I had a boyfriend who was a software engineer, and he had gone to do, he had spent like a couple of months in Tokyo doing something for his company, and was just desperately craving some sort of American food, and saw a Pizza Hut and went into a Pizza Hut and actually brought back a copy of the menu and showed it to me to illustrate how horrible it was. Because the thing is that in Japan, they don't understand American style pizza. So it was a Pizza Hut and they had pizza, but it was things like, pizza crust with mayonnaise and pineapple on it and sardines or something. I mean, everything was horrible. No. Every single thing they served was just horrifying.
Ugh, I don't wish to have that.
So it was that same thing where he was like, Pizza Hut! And then went in and was like, just so sad what was actually available to him.
I mean, now you know what it must be like to, you come from Guadalajara or something, and it's like, you hear, I guess I'll have some Mexi fries, and it's just looking at your tin of crustos from the taco time and just sitting at your table and just weeping and hating white people. Here is Don Taylor.
We should do our penis watch.
Do they still serve Crustos? Anyone? Crustos?
I don't know. I haven't been to a taco time or whatever.
Dude, taco time. Because I didn't get a chance to go on Cinco de Mayo because that was the day that it's like, I think I had to pick up Lara from the airport that day. So it was a whole, I didn't get a chance to get their like 49-cent tacos or whatever they were. But they had the Crustos and then they had the Choco Taco.
I made the worst mistake of my life, though. About 3 weeks ago, I went to Jack in the Box and I got the two tacos for 99 cents. And you see the picture on the side of the building. They have the big poster and it's like tacos. And they look like, you know, tacos. They're delicious looking. They're like, it's a taco shell.
Are you really about to complain that it didn't look like the picture when you got it?
Not only did it not look like the picture, it didn't even look like it was the same food. It's like what they ended up doing is that they just take the tortilla and they jam some stuff in it and they squeeze it together really tight and they drop the whole thing in the deep fryer. And then so you end up just this compressed, like greasy half disc
of something
that's kind of soft and squishy, but then way too chewy. And it was the most horrifying thing. And I just was like, well, no wonder they're only 99 cents. They should pay you to eat. It was horrible. But they really literally should not even actually have that picture because it looks nothing like it's not even the same thing.
Okay. And by the way, so this now I feel compelled to go there and to actually look at the item and to order the item. Did it taste good?
No.
Okay.
No,
so
it was awful.
It actually didn't even taste like not even the taste in
oh
your
my
mouth.
Oh, God, it was awful. And I'm a big fan of Jack in the Box. I honestly believe that Jack in the Box is a far superior fast food restaurant than to any other, you know, that we have available. But honest to God, the taco thing.
Excellent.
Wow.
Apparently, Taco Time, by the way, they still do have Crustos, which are delectable.
What is a Crusto?
Crustos are, they're tortilla chips, but they're not salted, that are deep fried, and then they have cinnamon and sugar all over them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they used to have, I don't know if they still have those at Taco Bell. They used to serve them.
Taco Bell's got the curly.
Yeah.
They're like the curly ones. Yeah, but they're even better because they are on a non-salted, like a neutral flavor tortilla chip that is just covered with salt and sugar. And it's, again, it's one of those things that, you know, from the hills of Mexico come a traditional treat of, you know, I saw this whole thing on the Discovery Channel the other day about the history of nachos. And, you know, and it was just, they started off with just this embarrassing American man on the street montage.
Isn't it like chow mein or something? Nachos are one of those things that we invented.
Yeah,
here.
Well, and they started off by interviewing just all of these idiots, you know, like on the streets of, I don't know, wherever, some, you know, any town USA, and going, so where do you think nachos come from? And like every single from Mexico, except for one guy who inexplicably just said they came from the Aztecs. And it's like, I don't know what, unless like Azteca is a place down the street from his house. But then they gave the whole history of nachos, which of course, yeah, were just created by some stooge white guy, which don't get me wrong, nachos are wonderful, but it's not like that's a thing that Aaron Duran's people were, you know, that they were like crushing corn with like a stone wheel or something, you know, while praying to the sun god. That's not really the way that was made.
The Toasterito, not an actual Mexican food.
Well, it's like the whole idea of anything being of like sweet and sour anything. Like, people in China don't eat sweet and sour anything unless it's something that we have subsequently sold back to them, like via the McDonald's Corporation.
Yeah, General Tso, not an actual Chinese guy.
Is that true?
Oh, is he? But he didn't.
He wasn't covered in sugar, though.
But he didn't make sugar deep fried sugar syrup soaked chicken bits, did
no,
he?
No. They did.
Thomas Gill is just drooling on himself.
No, don't get me wrong. I'm a big fan of that. Love me some nachos. Love me some General Tso's chicken. Don't confuse it with actual food from outside this country.
One thing, though, that General Tso's chicken and nachos have in common, though, when made badly. Oh.
Bad.
Wow,
no,
bad.
Terrible, terrible. Well, that's why I'm with Kelly Clark on the whole idea of the Triscuit nachos, because they are long to get soggy. It takes forever for the sog factor to set in with those things. That is why, and I'm just saying, this is just my observation. It's not a, you know, there's no graft for this. I'm just saying the best nachos I've had in many, 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 many months have been at Los Gorditos, because that is the thing where they know exactly where to place the salsa and the sour cream and the whatever, so that you don't end up with just like a weird mortar mixture of goo at the bottom. Everything stays crisp until the moment you put it in your mouth, and then you decide exactly what amounts you want to put on your condiments. That's all I'm saying. By the way, how great would it be? Here's a joke that somebody should do, like a Futurama style gag. Somebody really ought to do a thing where they get like, you know, where they have all the where they have all the Chinese warlords or, you know, whatever, and they're, you know, they're burying them underground as part of their, and then they just coat them in some sort of a caramelized red sugar sauce. You know, like the clay soldiers, but sort of like a General So's soldiers sort of a thing. Okay. All right. Here's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Penis Watch.
Excellent. Here is your Penis Watch for Tuesday, right here at the Rick Emerson radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a melting away. Bow, bow, bow. I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way. Bow,
bow, bow. Ashley Alford, in her mid-20s, won an award from her former employers, Aaron's of St. Louis, after a manager of the furniture and electrical store allegedly attacked her in a stockroom, lifting her shirt and masturbating over her while holding her down. Prosecutors allege Richard Moore, who is still awaiting trial, would pinch Ms. Alford and make inappropriate comments.
His name is Dick Moore.
His name is Dick Moore.
Okay.
Before the 2006 attack, they say on two occasions he hit her on the head with his penis. On the second,
something in my throat.
On the second occasion, he is also said to have held her down on a warehouse floor, lifted her shirt, and masturbated.
How can you hit somebody in the head with your penis unless they're a dwarf or you've got a 7-foot Johnson?
Well, I don't know.
You're talking like fire hose there. I mean, really, because it doesn't specify that he held her down but the one time. So to hit somebody in the head with the penis really is impressive or something, or at least perplexing.
Well, in court documents, she said that he sought sexual favors in return for her continued employment, her ability to leave for lunch or take a longer lunch hour, and her ability to take a vacation. She also testified that Moore gave her unsought gifts for which he demanded, quote, sucky, sucky. She testified that in September 2006, Mr. Moore grabbed her by her ponytail, unzipped his trousers, pulled her head back, and hit her in the head with his penis. On October 12, 2006, Moore again grabbed Alford, pulled her head against his pants, pulled out his penis, and hit her on the head with it.
Is this the photograph of her name is Ashley Alford? Is this the photograph?
Yes.
All right. I'm just going to say this. I've known girls like this. I'm looking at her picture right now. You can find her picture, by the way, at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for June 16th. I'm sorry, 14th.
In the second attack that day, he was said to have held her down, lifted her shirt, and masturbated until he ejaculated on her. Mr. Moore's semen and DNA were later found on paper towels collected by the police. She called an internal harassment hotline in May of 2006 to report the abuse, but said the complaint was never properly followed up. She added that at some point after the call, she was approached by Mr. Moore's supervisor, who confronted her in front of Mr. Moore and said was said to have told that he needed to watch his back because of the complaint.
And apparently,
Ms. Alford claimed after the confrontation she was denied a promotion for complaining about the assault. In deciding the damages, jurors were told that the company was worth $980 million and made $118 million last year in profit. The Atlanta-based company has 1,800 stores nationwide and employs more than 10,000 people. So how much would you guess her settlement was? How much was she awarded?
I don't know.
In the sexual harassment suit? The jury awarded her $95 million.
Are you kidding me? All right. Over what period of time did all this happen?
I think it was only like three occasions in like 2006.
But I mean,
there was a period of time when he'd been making the sucky comments and things like that.
But she was hit with a penis how many times?
Twice.
Okay. And how, but that wasn't like 5 minutes apart. Right?
No, it was a month apart.
How many times would a guy have to hit you in the face with a penis before you told somebody about that?
Probably the first time.
Yeah. So, I mean,
also, I don't think we would have gotten to that point after the unsought for gifts and the sucky sucky.
Seriously, as somebody has noted, the first penis hitting is his fault. The second penis hitting is both your faults.
Yeah.
Can I just tell you, unless this is a Halloween costume that she's wearing here, or she's going to some sort of, I don't know. She's going to one of those sort of like the pole dancing aerobics places. I'm just saying. I mean, I don't think that this is the first, second, fifth, or 50th time that a penis has struck this girl in the face. That's all I'm saying. That's just my estimation as a pundit. I'm just opinionizing here. That's all. I'm just talking off the top of my head. Also, never mind. I'm not even going to say it. She, forget it. I was going to be. She looks like somebody. She looks like somebody that we kind of know, and I'm just not even gonna go down that road because then that's just gonna get me in trouble. But I will say, as somebody else has noted here, for $95 million, you could get a platoon of guys to come and just beat me senseless with their penises.
And yes, that is a Halloween costume.
Is it really?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because otherwise, it's just, you know, that does not necessarily lend credence to her case. How much? No. I mean, really, honestly, how many millions of dollars? You think of the most repellent guy you can possibly imagine, the most horrible man you know in real life. I would imagine for a tenth of that, you would let him just pistol whip you with his penis.
Probably,
I mean,
yeah.
So, you know.
I'm sure I would let somebody hit me in the head with their penis for like 10 grand.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really. I mean, you know, and I mean, I'm talking long hits.
$1,000, you could just bunk me in the nose with it.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with that.
And I'm talking about
as long
like
as you just put it back away right after.
And with actually, and like, and I mean with like the flaccid, because then you get the whole k-ksh thing at the end of it, too. You get the. You know.
I mean, you know, I'd let you like, you know, sort of bruise me on the chin for $50,000 with it, you know?
Did he really ask for sucky, sucky?
That's what it says, yes.
Okay. Did he do it in sort of a funny Asian voice?
I hope so.
While rocking back and forth from foot to foot? It's wonderful. Okay, excellent. There's your... What company was this?
Aaron's. They do the rent-to-own appliances and furniture.
I always thought that... So is that a national chain?
Yeah.
Okay, see, I always thought that was just like a regional place. Okay, so I didn't think I would be that lucky. All right. There's your penis watch for...
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away. Take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
This comment says, if you were hit in the face with a wang on one occasion, it is your choice. It is not like the guy was keeping her in some sort of Vietnamese bamboo cage.
No.
For $95 million, the whole company should get to get in line and thwack her on the head with her penises.
And, you know, you're working at Aaron's.
Yeah.
You know, if you were working in some kind of, you know, you're working for Morgan Stanley or something, and you were being paid a whole lot of money, and you really needed that job, and you knew that there weren't a lot of other jobs doing what you're doing.
Actually,
if you leave, so maybe at some point, you know, you may just go, okay, I will put up with this one time of being hit in the head with a penis. Then the second time you go, okay, that's too many.
See, and almost like, I think if you're working at Morgan Stanley, you probably have, I mean, just as little leg to stand. You could probably, because you have means. I think if you're working at the Apple iPhone factory in, you know, in China, you probably are just going to go, well, I take this for another week. Then we see what happens.
You see, I always think of it in the opposite. I mean, if you have like a really crappy job, there are a lot of other really crappy jobs where you're not going to get hit in the head with some guy's penis. On the other
well,
hand,
I don't know.
If you work,
have changed the last couple of years.
You work at Jet Propulsion Labs. You know, there's only so many other places that can hire you to do what you do.
That's where the penis rockets across the planes and hits you in the back of the head. So the penis approaches terminal velocity right before it hits you between the eyes. All right, let's quit talking about penises hitting you in the face.
Can we? Okay.
All right.
Well, all right.
I mean, unless you really want to, we can stay on that note if you like.
No, that's
okay.
Fine. Okay.
Right.
New York appears to be inching closer to becoming the latest state to legalize same-sex marriage. The New York Times reports that three wavering Democratic state senators have agreed to support the proposal, leaving gay marriage advocates only three votes shy of the total they would need for passage. Those three lawmakers had previously voted against the measure, and their reversal gives Senate Democrats a near unanimous voting block heading into a possible vote later this week. The party's one lone holdout, Ruben Diaz Sr., is one of the most vocal opponents of the bill. Advocates, however, still appear to have their work cut out for them. They'll need to find the three remaining votes they need within the chamber's Republican majority, which voted unanimously against the effort 2 years ago. Many believe that things would be different this time around. The Times notes that at least five Republican senators have indicated that they are now undecided on the bill, and Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo has said he's confident that at least three of them will break with their party if given the chance.
Let's do one more here, and then we will, and then we'll actually do the top five, which. Do I actually have it in front of me? I do have it in front of me. So let's do one more, then we'll do the top five for today.
Well, let's do the clown watch. Then.
Excellent. Here's your clown watch for, wait, hold on. Wait, there we go. For Tuesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
The clown who had to prove he could read and write before taking his seat in Brazil's Congress wants to encourage illiterate adults how to read and write themselves. Francisco Silva's first legislative proposal calls for a one-time payment of $345 to any illiterate adult who learns to read and write. Silva spokeswoman Edith Silva said Tuesday payment would be made at the end of a six-month literacy course. Silva is known as Tiririca, which means grumpy in Portuguese. He won more votes than any other candidate in Brazil's October elections, but critics suggested he could not read or write, and he had to prove to a judge that he met literacy requirements to be a congressman.
So this is sort of a heartwarming story where the clown has to appear in court and demonstrate his literacy and his writing skills.
Yes, and now he is like got this thing where he's saying other people who cannot read and write, if you take a literacy course and pass it, I'll give you $345.
Excellent. There's your clown watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Hold on a second.
Of course, he's still a clown, so therefore he's still evil.
He's still evil. No, it's, don't get me wrong. He'll eventually use those writing skills to, to write a ransom note of some kind. All right, there's your clown watch for Tuesday. All right, have I handed you the top five?
No, you have not, sir.
See, when are you going to do that? Why is it going to be like that? You're really amusing yourself over there today.
I am. Some days it's just for me, really.
Let's see if I've got that while we do.
The last time I pulled something into the Dropbox for you, I apparently pulled several files, including the Dropbox, into the folder and sent it to you, and now it's just gone. The whole thing is gone.
You dropped the Dropbox into itself?
Apparently so, yes.
How did you even do that?
I don't know. But now it's gone. I dragged the Dropbox into the folder that you opened, and now it's gone.
Okay. That's wonderful. Here, as penance, you should, as a way to make it up to God and the universe and apparently the laws of physics, you should talk a bit about Squire's Electric while I locate this soundbite that I'm looking for.
I don't have any of their information in front of me, so I can't tell you like what their phone number or anything is.
You know their website and their Facebook page.
I do know. Squire's Electric is where you should go for all of your electrical needs, because if you are like me, you do stupid things all of the time. Like, for example, drag the actual app into itself and make it vanish.
Yeah, I can vouch for that.
Into like a black hole of nothingness. So imagine if I was trying to, say, replace a light switch. I would just burn my entire house down, which is why I call a professional like Squire's Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com, or you can go and see them on Facebook, where they will show you wonderful things like people who had snakes and rats living in their boxes and horrible wiring that no one should ever have done, and then they laugh up their sleeve and fix it and make it all better.
They laugh up their sleeve?
They laugh up their sleeve.
At the
foolish people.
Oh,
who
the
do
foolishness
the bad,
of the
bad
people
wiring.
Who required their
right.
sort of yeah, they required their presence.
And they hold your hand and they make you feel better about the fact that the last person there didn't know anything. So
you can think,
really,
look, at least you're not this poor sod that we had to deal
right.
with yesterday.
Right, and then you can watch Ben fix something and enjoy the sight of his tattoo. So,
excellent.
So call Squire's Electric at, what's the phone number?
503-252-1609.
There you go. Or visit them online at squireselectric.com or go to facebook.com/squireselectric.
Yes. There we go. That's the Phil Hartman yes that I was looking for, by the way. Right here.
Yes.
That's what you're... Because it's not even like you're doing Ed McMahon. You're doing Phil Hartman as Ed McMahon.
Pretty much, yeah.
And it's Phil Hartman as Ed McMahon during the Carcinio sketch on SNL specifically. That really is what you're saying. Because that's, by the way, which is one of the... really one of the most brilliant sketches that Hartman was ever a part of. From top to bottom. And as much as I was sort of... I kind of ran hot and cold on Dana Carvey sometimes, but the sketch on SNL where they did the Carcinio thing, where Johnny Carson decided that he had to sort of hip up and become you know, cool and down with the kids, and so the Johnny Carson show becomes Carcinio. And then and suddenly, like, Ed McMahon is out there, you know, Phil Hartman is Ed McMahon with, like, the hammer pants and, like, the weird, the slanty, like, Gumby haircut, the Kid and Play haircut. And there's just and they set up such a brilliant reversal. I should also, you know what, that'll be our beginning of show clip tomorrow. Tomorrow that'll be our start of show clip, will be the Carcinio thing, because there's that whole thing where McMahon is just doing the,
yes,
you know, and the, you are correct, oh prognosticator, or whatever. And he's doing all that stuff. And then they do the most brilliant lead up to this moment where you just see, Carvey as Carson having tried to hip himself up by becoming all hip hop. And there's this moment where Carcinio just says something like, this isn't really working, is it, Ed? And then Hartman just goes, no, sir. And it's like the most, it's like bam, 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 bing, the one that's different. It's just freaking awesome. It's fantastic.
Yes.
All right, excellent. There's your your top five for today.
So I fixed my Dropbox problem. But I did indeed do exactly what I thought I did. I pulled the Dropbox into itself.
And also TweetDeck, apparently.
Yes, and Audacity, and my recording thing.
This is like the whole thing of like God making a boulder that he himself cannot lift.
And VLC. I pulled all of those.
You just dumped your whole computer into the Dropbox.
No, I just dragged like 5 different desktop icons into the Dropbox, including the icon for the Dropbox.
You're weird, man. All right.
Okay.
You done over there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Everything's back where it's supposed to be.
There's your top five.
Thank you.
Here is Don Taylor with your top five. Don't forget to join us tomorrow, by the way, when our guests will include Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. And this is all true. Here is your top five, randomly selected by the hand of fate from December 8th, 1973.
I love this list.
It actually doesn't suck. It's actually not flat out terrible. It's a little hit or miss, but it's actually not bad in the traditional sense.
Our honorable mention is Ringo Starr. Photograph,
which is a song that doesn't really get played enough.
No, I
would
love
say
this
that
song.
It's a song that doesn't. It's a song that one doesn't hear as much as one probably should. This is from his self-titled album, which is called Ringo, which came out, I think, earlier that same year.
Album. It's got this great cover of a Randy Newman song, Have You Seen My Baby? And it's a really terrific cover.
And it has that, it almost sounds like, that it has that like Electric Light Orchestra sound, like a Jeff Lynn, sort of a sound to it.
And he's sort of a precursor to the 80s when everything had to have a saxophone.
Totally. All four Beatles are on this record, by the way. Not together, but they're sort of scattered over the record, not unlike how Harrison was on some of the solo stuff that Lennon did.
And Mark Bolan.
Really?
Yeah. And, of course, Billy Preston, who was like the fifth Beatle.
Oh, he's the Billy Preston, the keyboard player.
Yeah.
The Get Back guy. There was some other single off this record, but I can't think of what it was.
Was it Oh My My?
It's, 16. You're 16. Yeah, was the other hit off this. I like Ringo Starr. I know that, here's the thing about Ringo Starr, he also is, I mean, for obvious reasons, I guess, he's the one who seems to have the fewest issues with being an ex-Beatle.
Yeah.
You know, because I guess the pressure is so much on Lennon and McCartney because they're the ones who wrote everything. You know, and then, I don't know, and then George Harrison just sort of seems like a blank to me most of the time. But Ringo is the one who, you know, it's not like everything has gone perfectly for him, but he's the one who seems to have transitioned pretty easily into post-Beatle life of just sort of touring and just, you know, with his all-star band and just doing all that stuff and just having kind of a good time of it.
He also seemed, like, just far less neurotic than the other three.
Well, I think it's because Ringo, of all of them, I'm not saying the Beatles, this sounds stupid, I'm not saying the Beatles were untalented, but certainly they're not, but of course talent isn't enough, you know, you have to have a lot of luck, and I think Ringo, of all of them, was the one who recognized most of all that they got phenomenally lucky. I mean, they've asked him, you know, he has that famous quote where they said, well, how did you feel when the Beatles hit to Ben? He's like, well, I felt like the fella who won the pools. You know, because however talented you are, I mean, we all know talented people who don't ever amount to anything, and it's like, I think he is the one who recognized And not just because he's just the drummer or whatever, but I think he just he seemed to just sort of get right off that, like, the universe just gave him a big wet kiss and he was just going to sort of roll with it. You see, plus also he did that great thing a couple years ago where he had a cutoff date for autographing stuff. It was like June of 2008 or something. He's like, at the end of June 2008, I'm not going to autograph anything. If you send it to me, I'm going to incinerate it. And he said that I've got a huge furnace out back and it all just goes into the fire. So if you want anything signed, send it to me now, because after that it goes into the rubbish, which was sort of awesome because they just, you know, he just didn't, you know, he was like, I got a life to live. I can't spend my time sitting around signing crap for you sods. So, you know. This is the top five from December 8th, 1973, rather.
Number five is Chicago, Ugh. Just You and Me.
And the trend is over. I hate to test Chicago.
Oh, good. I'm glad, because I was going to say...
Listen, just come on. Kill me.
I love horns, and I love horns in rock bands. You are my love. I loathe Chicago.
That's terrible. You are my inspiration. Here's the thing about Chicago. Chicago is a band that exists outside of and separate from any definable genre. They're not rock. They don't swing. They got no funk. There's no soul. They're not country. This isn't jazz. This is genreless music. There is, which leads me to believe that it is not, in fact, music. It's just a series of sounds. There's no actual music happening here.
Yeah, my husband is a fellow who likes, he likes his prog rock. And he will actually sort of allow that kind of definition to include bands like Chicago and Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Wrong.
And it's like, and I had to explain to him once that if I ever hear, I used to only have an AM radio in this truck that I used to drive around all the time, and the only LA station worth listening to was the oldies station. And then if I hear the song Spinning Wheel by Blood, Sweat, and Tears one more time, I'm going to stab someone in the eye. And I hate Chicago.
I mean, and yet you know it.
Well, yes.
You can't escape it because it's everywhere. And there are like 700 people in this band,
and
too.
And it's just so bland.
That's the thing. No, it is like you took... It is like you took, like, Tower of Power and left them in the desert for 10 or 12 years.
The Tower of Power, awesome.
Came back later and you went, oh, that's great, it's been bleached enough. Yeah. That's wonderful. There's nothing actually left in this. Oh, God. Okay, let's be done with this. This is the top five from December 8th, 1973.
And moving on to someone else who I loathe. Number four is Charlie Rich, The Most Beautiful Girl.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate this song.
This is from the Behind Closed Doors album.
Hey, did you happen to see the most beautiful girl in the world?
I always equate this with Roger Whittaker, of course, but...
My high school vice principal looked exactly like Charlie Rich, and he had that white blonde hair that looked kind of like a weird dirty yellow, like someone had urinated it in places.
Tell her I'm sorry. Tell her I need my baby.
Oh, it took three people to write this song.
That I love her. I woke up this morning.
Plus, egregious use of the slide guitar.
Realized what I had done.
By the way, in case you were wondering what sort of an era this is for pop music outside of this top five, so at this point in time, so this song actually charted not only in the Billboard Hot 100, it charted on the album charted as well, and then it charted on the Easy Listening charts, because at that point, Billboard magazine, then as now, sort of the arbiter of what's successful and what's not, Billboard actually had, up until like 1987 or something, they had an Easy Listening chart. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know about the 70s, that there was, in fact, a Billboard magazine Easy Listening chart. By the way, on that Easy Listening chart, in number one terms, this song was flanked by Leave Me Alone by Helen Reddy and Paper Roses by Marie Osmond. So that...
I still love Paper Roses. I love that song.
I don't have any issue with that song, but that does tell you exactly the tone and tenor of American soft rock at that time.
If you happen to see the most beautiful girl that
All right, these are the top five songs from December 8th, 1973. The best part was a few minutes ago when you were saying, this is great, this top five is wonderful.
I did want to say there's a piece in this Wikipedia entry that Rich was named by the Country Music Association Entertainer of the Year in 1974. He had three more top five hits in 75, and then he began to drink heavily, causing considerable problems off stage. In 1975, he presented the award for Entertainment of the Year while visibly intoxicated. And instead of reading the name of the winner just off the card like he was supposed to, he set fire to the envelope with a cigarette lighter and announced the award had gone to my friend, Mr. John Denver.
Awesome. Well, going out strong is what that is.
And but apparently he hated John Denver and he thought that he shouldn't be winning it because he was too pop. And to not enough country. So he set fire to the envelope.
Charlie Rich is my blood enemy from now on. All right. As the top five songs from December 8th, 1973.
Well, now we're getting back to it. Number three, The Carpenters, Top of the World.
Who was here that didn't like The Carpenters?
I don't. Was that Ryan White, I think?
I think it was Ryan White because his parents sort of subjected him to it, I think, all the time.
Communist.
Such a feeling's coming over me. There is wonder in most everything I see.
It's like every Carpenter song, you're just picturing some sort of a montage in a Wes Anderson film.
Yeah. It's just a grassy hill somewhere with daisies
and lots of white teeth.
Everything I want the world to be is now coming true, especially for. Because you are here, you're the nearest thing to heaven that I've seen. I'm on the top of the world, looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world.
See, I mean, I gotta tell you, that's... Really, there are few people that created choruses that were that. Because the thing about that song is that even if you have, I would bet my bottom dollar that even if someone has never heard this before, I don't mean never consciously heard it. I mean never heard it. That chorus sounds instantly familiar because it is like all the best parts. It's all the best dynamics of a chorus put into one, and it sounds like a lot of other things that you probably already like without actually ripping any of them off deliberately. It just has, and plus Karen Carpenter, let's be honest, Karen Carpenter's voice, it was just like being given like a warm aural bath.
Yes, her voice is just a thing of amazing beauty.
Be just the same for you and me, all I need will be mine if you are here. I'm on the
Come on,
top
and sing along.
Of the world, looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the
This is one of those songs that if you have recently fallen in love or if you are like in some weird honeymoon phase or having an especially great day or whatever, it's the best song you've ever heard and little animated bluebirds come and rest on your shoulders. And if you have just broken up with somebody, then it becomes some horrible, ironic serial mom thing where you just want to go on a chainsaw-killing spree accompanied by this song. And it's because the song itself seems like some cosmic joke to you or just designed to make you bitter. Excellent. Yes. These are the top five songs from December 8th, 1973. Don Taylor?
Number two, Elton John, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
I should know, by the way, for the record, this is my favorite Elton John song. And I'm a big fan of I don't even have a certain period, but Elton John songs that are good are fantastic. And he's done some tripe, to be sure. But this is my favorite of all Elton John songs.
When are you gonna come down? When are you going to land? I should have stayed. On the phone, you should have listened to my own mind. You know you can't hold me forever. I didn't sign up for you. I'm not a present for your friends too old. But this boy's too young to be singing.
The thing about Elton John at his best. Elton John was not unlike the Beach Boys in that you listen to a song like All Summer Long, where even as it's sort of a joyous, bouncy song, they just sound so indescribably sad.
Yeah.
And that's Elton John, too.
This reminds me so deeply of just a time in my life when I was very, very young, when you would have that thing where you would just fall so in love with music that there would be like, not even just song, an album, for example, in this case this was one of the ones for me,
yeah,
where every single thing about it seemed magical. Every song, the story behind all of the songs. You'd open up the big double record and
yeah,
you just look at all of the pictures and read the lyrics over and over again.
This is what a time in Elton John's career, he and Bernie Taupin both, when they was just, it was like gold. I mean, it was everything they did. I mean, he was obviously on some creative arc, some zenith, you know, that was just, I mean, untouchable. I mean, when you consider
Captain Fantastic came out, what, like less than a year after
this? Oh, yeah, because he was doing like an album, sometimes two albums in a year.
Well, Captain Fantastic was on his album because of this. Captain Fantastic was number one on the Billboard charts before it even hit stores.
On pre-sales alone.
Yeah.
And it's even more impressive when you consider that these two guys, Bernie Taupin and Elton John, have written the bulk of Elton John's stuff. And that they weren't even in the same room when they would write songs together.
Yeah.
Taupin would just write these lyrics and he would give them to Elton John, and Elton John would go, I mean, this is what's astounding just to me as sort of just an amateur songwriter. Taupin would just give him these lyrics and John would look and go, I can write a song around that. And then he would just sit down at the piano and take the lyric and write a song around the lyrics, which is like impossible. And yet that's how they would do it. I mean, it's just, yeah, this is like as good as it gets. I mean, it's this ultra light, it's just like this helium, you know, of a song that just floats above your head like this, just this sort of angel hair. It is just, it's amazing. I mean, it's like, that is, and it's such an indescribably beautiful song, and it is sort of catchy and poppy, but it's just so sad sounding, which is the way with a lot of those great Elton John songs. You know, like you hear like Your Song, which is a good example of that, I guess, where Your Song is presumably happy because he's in love and he's, you know, yeah, and he's sitting on the roof and picking at the moss or whatever he's doing. But it's like the saddest sounding song for reasons you can't really explain. It's so easy. I don't even say kids today, but I think anybody today, it's so easy to write off Elton John as just being some stooge who does Disney things and, you know, Broadway crap, which is true to some degree. But so what? I mean, it's like that guy, he did that, which is why forever he has nothing to prove to me. Because, I mean, once you do that, much less several albums of that, it's like you can suck all you want. I don't care. You know, you've sort of earned the right to do whatever you want with the rest of your career. These are the top five songs from December 8th, 1973. Don Taylor.
Number one, Steve Miller, The Joker.
I have such mixed feelings about this.
I do too. I was thinking about this and just feeling like this is a song that I used to loathe. And most of my life, I loathed it. And I have to admit that I've been coming around in recent years to actually starting to kind of like it. But for most of my life, I hated the song. Hated. Mostly, I think, because of the peaches in the tree line.
Yeah, well, there's that, and there's the, you know, and plus it's just overplayed. And
yeah,
and also, Steve Miller, I don't know if it's this way in the rest of the country or not, but Steve Miller, I was talking to Iris Harrison at KGUN about this one time. Steve Miller has this, he must have figured out with a spreadsheet or something, like where his bread is buttered, because he comes to the Northwest constantly. I mean, like every year, sometimes he will swing through here twice in a year, which is a thing, you know, you do if you're an up-and-coming band or whatever. But it's like, you know, I wouldn't go so far as, you know, it's not like he's a has-been or something, but obviously he's, you know, he has a certain era that people really love him for, and he puts out new music and people hear that, but they like the hits. But he comes through and he plays pretty sizable venues. I mean, he plays the Gorge still, at least once every couple of years. And he's through here constantly. And so as a kid just growing up, it was like Steve Miller was one of those guys. Like, I remember just hearing that Fly Like an Eagle album over and over when I was a kid, even though I don't think I owned it until I was a teenager. But But, you know, this is one of those songs that's just so goofy and good-natured that it's just impossible not to like it somehow, even if you want to dislike it. I think it is difficult. This is the number one song from December 8th, 1973.
Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah. Some call me the gangster of love. Some people call me Maurice.
The gangster of love.
He's also a gazillion years old, by the way.
Yeah.
He was born in 1943.
Really?
He's 68 years old. He recorded his first album in 1968.
Well, don't you worry, baby, don't worry, because I'm right here.
The thing about this song, too, is leaving apart all the retarded lyrics about the peaches and the tree and the pompous and the whatever. It's like you listen to just the actual music, just the sound of it. I mean, the production on this record is fantastic and doesn't sound dated at all. It's just, it's a big, loud, echoey, sparse sound that, like all the best records, just sounds like a band in a room with one big microphone in the middle of it all and everybody playing. I mean, there's no, like, weird 70s stuff happening in this record. There's no synth. There's no bizarre, like, talk box crap happening. It's just guitar, bass, drums, vocals, and then you know, and it's all put together with this loud sort of organic sound to it.
Well, and also probably the reason that he keeps coming through the Pacific Northwest all the time and playing is because he actually lives in the Pacific Northwest.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it says, according to Wikipedia, he has homes in Ketchum, Idaho, and in the San Juan Islands.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. I guess that would explain. So, like, from going to, from there to the gorge is basically like 90 minutes, you know, on his private jet or whatever, and just, you know, and he pops down there and, you know, makes 40 grand and goes home. He's another guy, by the way, that you don't... You hear this song and you go, oh, Steve Miller. And then you look at the long list of songs you know by him. And, I mean, there's, you know, 10 or 12 songs that probably everybody who has ever heard classic rock radio knows.
Really, when he was in high school, he taught a classmate a few guitar chords so that that classmate could join the band. And so that's how we got the wonder that is Buzz Skaggs.
Really?
Their very first band was together in high school called The Marksmen because they were at St. Mark's School.
Now page two. Here's the other thing about Steve Miller songs. If you think about it, Steve Miller songs, a lot of them, they all have that one moment that everybody in the crowd must sing because, because it jumps out or it's some sort of a lyrical hook. Like in this one, there's two of them. There's the peaches and the tree thing, but there's also the part when he goes, some people call me Maurice, and everybody in the crowd goes, wah, wah, you know, or whatever. It's like the Take the Money and Run has that too. When he does that weird vocal run of like Phoenix, Arizona, all the way to Tacoma, Philadelphia, Atlanta, LA, and he does that weird trill that everybody sings. Also, by the way, if you've ever seen Steve Miller in concert, you know exactly what I'm talking about here. It's when he plays Take the Money and Run, and there's that Take the Money and Run's got several of them actually, because there's that weird drum intro where he does the thing on the hi-hat or wherever where he goes ch-ch-ch-ch. And then immediately that is followed by everybody, by the band doing the assembled woo-hoo, which everybody in the audience, it's like legally required that you sing the woo-hoo with Steve Miller. In fact, I'll just play this as we end here because it was next anyway. Wait for it. There you go. See? Fantastic. All right. With that, we will bring a curtain down on today's program. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when our guests will include Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. Above the Milkpacking District here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. The news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer, Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff, Cheryl Katakoa. It is Tuesday, June 14th, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
Shot a man while robbing his castle. Bobby Sue took the money and run. Go on, take the money and run. Go on, take the money and run. Go on.
Texas. You know he knows just exactly what the facts is. He ain't gonna let those two escape justice.